Let's do this, Johnny.
What day do fish hate the most?
Wednesday.
What? Friday.
I'm screaming.
And every time
it took a minute. It took a minute.
Every time he tell one, look, all right, I'll get you to the next one.
I just follow him.
Why did the deer go to the dentist? Because he had a buck tooth.
He be so tickled.
One of them, he said it was funny. That man couldn't wait to throw his hat at him. But you know what's funny? What I forgot to talk about when we did the part where the guy talking about the hidden job market and all that stuff, right? I forgot to add on to that of how right the recruiter was, because when I was interviewing for Yahoo, and this is the thing that my clients can see in the videos, I was showcasing exactly how that situation happened. I seen the recruiter post a role. I reached out about the role, and they was like, oh, this is like an internship. But it's like, however, we do have a role opening up pretty soon. It was like right before it even got posted. And so before this even happened, I got a chance to talk with the hiring manager
before the role even got posted.
So yeah. I was already in good gracious before then to where, so what happened was I ended up interviewing for two roles. So the first role I didn't get because it was like a manager role and I needed a tad bit more experience, but I did so well. They was like, yo, would you mind coming on the team as an analyst? I was like, yeah, for sure. And so I knocked that out of the park as usual because I only had like one more interview to do just for that since it was like kind of similar. And like I got the verbal offer for that. Of course, that's where all the funny stuff come from. The Lloyd thing got posted because
screaming.
It got pulled because of budget stuff. So I like had a verbal.
That be happening a lot, especially in this climate.
Yeah, but they were really cool because due to the fact that they hit me up when it came back open, but I was already off the market by then.
Mm-hmm. So they did follow up. 10 points for them.
Yeah, that was cool. Like, so one of the strategies I do. Hiring managers or people I really liked in the interview process, I stay in contact with them.
As you should.
I stay in contact with them. And speaking of, I need to reach out to Sean now to see if he still wants to apply to that role. It's a role open up my company, and he's one of the first people I thought about because he got all the experience and he'd be a good fit.
My homeboy?
Nah.
Oh.
The guy that he used to be the director. So Yahoo was – one of the reasons why I want to work with Yahoo, one of their security teams, is they have – the security team's called Paranoids, so that's a cool name.
That is a cool name.
And then
they probably having fun.
For them, they were their team, the IR team was called the Fire Team, and so it was like it's just cool. It seemed like you got a name, and people know
it
you
just
are.
Feel it that it gives you the vibes. Like we finna get in here and handle some business.
Yeah, so that's what I want. I mean, but
that's actually fun.
Did you get a chance to meet Josh? My client, Josh, I know that he was at our thing in August when we went down to the Black is Tech thing. Did you get to meet him at Afrotech?
Maybe not.
I know I seen, I think he got to meet Shanae because I seen him talking to her husband. But Josh actually works there now. He's been doing good, killing it there. And that's another thing. That's the reason why this is the thing that a lot of recruiters and sometimes companies don't realize. Your interview process can make and break you.
Quickly.
It'll be a way for people who can say, hey, even though I didn't get a job, I would recommend people to go interview with y'all.
Yep.
Like, y'all's process was good, and that process was good to where, like, I wasn't working there, so, of course, I didn't refer them. But I said, hey, I know a guy. Whenever they say the roles was open up for, like, I think it was, like, a tier one role. And she was keeping me updated all the time and saying, hey, I just wanted to let you know he's been doing excellent in interviews, and the team really likes him. So I was like, that's the sign of a good recruiter.
Yeah.
Not all this. I got to hound you down and
jump through hoops.
Mm-hmm. All that other crazy stuff. Yeah, man. But, hmm. Interesting.
It's a lot up there.
I know. Everybody looking at, like, I'm looking at the docket, y'all, because I got to double check, too, because I don't know if this is recent or not, but, like.
Low-key, we should start from the bottom.
Hang on. Because I'm trying to see if. They did another round of layoffs, CrowdStrike. Let's see. Okay. Maybe they didn't. I saw something on LinkedIn right before I got on here, but they like just fire some people. But I feel like the recruiter was talking about the time we were talking about when we covered CrowdStrike some months ago about the people they fired for AI and stuff.
Yeah.
But before we do that, we're going to do something special for the audio people.
Let's get it.
Because the audio, we can play whatever we want. And so I'm trying to see what they should be listening to. Thanksgiving is coming up. Hopefully this is dropping for you on Thanksgiving to see, like, what you're thankful for. So, like, what would be a song you would, let's say, picture it. You're getting ready to drive to the family function for Thanksgiving. What you listening to in the car?
I'm getting ready to drive to the family function. I'm playing something to get turnt, hype. What have I been listening to? Nothing I've been listening to is really turnt and hype.
You know,
I've been listening to Cushion Orange Juice too, though. So something off of there, or Am I the Drama? Something to get me, like, you know, there. I probably play Bodega Baddie to get me hype on the way there.
What about this? With the remix, though.
Somebody better.
Somebody better get her, cause she out here looking fine. Better pop your shit, because I'm out here popping mine. The way these diamonds hitting bitches, damn, you're going blind. Let this Don Julio gon' do the trick every time. Nigga lose me, you know that nigga out his mind. Tell her make a hit, she in the stool just wasting time. If I take a nigga, I don't wanna hear no crime. Cause I ain't say shit when hoes was out here fucking mine. Look, outside grinding, I'ma shine all summer. Badass bitch, I know that every nigga wanna. Real fine shit, man, I get it from my mother. I'm a demon, I'll fuck ya, I ban fuck your brother. Bottle after bottle, left the bottles in this motherfucker. All my friends' tears look like models in this motherfucker. Hoes throwing ass, need some dollars in this motherfucker. Yellow bitch, look like Lotto in this motherfucker. Somebody better get her, cause she out here looking fine. Better pop your shit, because I'm out here popping mine. The way these diamonds hitting bitches, damn, you're going blind. Let this Don Julio gon' do the trick every time. Nigga lose me, you know that nigga out his mind. Tell her make a hit, she in the stool just wasting time. If I take a nigga, I don't wanna hear no crime. Cause I ain't say shit when hoes was out here fucking mine.
If I was pulling up, I'd probably try to slow it down a little bit, you know, trying to be cool. But sometimes, sometimes you be just in the whip and you be trying to figure out what is it. And so you got to play something like this.
Is in my cars, in my clothes that make these hoes
don't fuck. You know, the old whip. You seen Webby and Boosie on the stage in Sexy Red?
No, when? Recently?
But like her birthday bash, they performed Wipe Me Down.
That probably was lit. It probably was lit.
They was like Webby. It was not that it was not cold in St. Louis like that. Why you had that on? Now they verses would be, I'm trying to see who they would go against. Webby and Lucy.
If I want to be smooth, I'm gonna play some old Jeezy. If I'm trying to be on some player, like I know a broad name, damn, baby, off the chain.
You want to go to a YoungBoy concert?
No, I'm not going.
I can see you.
I can
see you and Disney at the YoungBoy concert.
See that.
I can see y'all at the YoungBoy concert.
You can.
I can see you there.
I wouldn't buy a ticket, but if somebody bought me a ticket, I would go.
I can see you and Disney there.
Oh, God.
Exactly. But you gotta dress like you're ready for action.
Nah, facts.
I just need to put some gunshots over there.
I bust phrase to them cows. I had some beef with some niggas. I straight fucked over they pot. I made shit seize through the city. And I sent bits with them dollars. And I
do you like Gotti?
Bitch, I went crazy with bags. And I was fucked up with 10. Well, the same clothes, that's my partner. He broke.
I just want to hit a 30-day straight part.
I was mad in my bar, but shit, I'm gone. You can't stop me. He got me hooked on that bar. We both was going through some problems. Your nigga cut those your son. He eat a slime or a goblin. You know I'm with a young boy. I
kill that bitch front his mom. Like, dead of that straight. I ain't sleep for that three. Hold on, let me kiss again. I like dead of that straight. I ain't sleep from 2 to 3. I like dead of that straight. I was rolling out the bank.
Youngboy fan. Hey, you remember? They used to have them Youngboy fans be like.
Yes.
Oh, this gonna be last song. Yeah.
Yo. Sack coming in and the money on four.
Gotta put a stack on it.
Yeah, hit a plate. Scrub it off the plate. Hey, gotta put the camp on it. Pussy ass nigga all the time in that tough shit.
He's about as high as this talk.
Everybody sitting at the table around here. Yeah.
That's a lot of place on it.
Running through the money and the bitch keep calling. Hold up.
She on the weight on it.
VVS diamond dripping on my t-shirt. Reach for it.
I'm gonna put your face on it.
Rolls Royce truck on the way, cashed out for it. Still had to wait on it. Blood fucked around.
Seen the wrong damn car.
Nigga still had to pay for it.
Pack coming in on iPhone. I'ma keep it 30 in my fault. I'ma buy a Birkin from my shop. Nigga did me dirty, ran off on me.
Too cold.
Plug did me dirty, took off on me. Lil Hilda just folded that phone on me. I'm from the streets. You gotta pay
no.
What you like.
I can't say no because I haven't heard it.
You just like your father
and he was a rat. So that mean he raised.
You said Lucci?
Yeah.
I had talking about, yeah. I want that dude. I shot on them pussies the same night. He look about pregnant now.
Won't put no hoes on no pedals or edibles. I'm trying to stalk him the same night. I put two hoes on the same flight.
Cooked up 10 bricks in the same
place. He was making a cook up every day.
The same Glock. So many of you niggas got the same watch. Why you competing with me, nigga? We are not playing with the same shit. It's murder, no money for high. And this shit been stuck on my mindset. Set coming in and I'm on four.
These are my. These are my my top hits that I listen to all the time.
Okay, Trina. It's funny because it's different. Like, throw this money, I get the bag.
Money or the songs is literally all over the place. Some is R&B, some is not.
Let me see. Welcome back to episode 196 of the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD, and we got Saba Shorty in the building with us today.
Hey, y'all.
It's a couple of days before Thanksgiving, so we want to give thanks and give y'all an episode so y'all can watch it while y'all eating y'all stuffing or... Well, I call it dressing. Do you call it dressing?
Absolutely dressing. Oh. I'm never calling it stuffing.
I feel like white. I feel like dressing is for. I mean, stuffing is for white people.
Agreed.
Yeah, dressing, turkey. Matter of fact, I'm really geeked out today because since I'm not working, I could be as chatty as I want to. Let me see, real quick. This is what I want to give y'all.
Look at here.
I know this job I'm gonna be doing.
Green. It's never gonna get old.
Beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, lamb, rams, hogs, dogs, chicken, turkeys, rabbits. You name it! Look! I got beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, lamb, rams, hogs, dogs, beans, greens.
Sorry, the remix have been going on.
Why does it remind me of people? Wasn't we just talking about how I got irritated when people be hitting the dab? This is the song.
Beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes.
Me when the dressing get done. Bye.
But nah, man, I know y'all, hopefully y'all eating good right now, y'all with y'all fam, whether you celebrate or don't celebrate, at least you off work and you ain't got nothing to do. And I'm proclaiming this right now, the Cowboys going to beat the Chiefs. So how about them Cowboys? And yeah, man, if y'all still listening right now, y'all know what to do. If you're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube Music, wherever, please follow us and leave us a review on the podcast. Help us out. And if you're on YouTube, just hit the thumbs up button, hype us up. Hype us up.
Hype me up.
And subscribe if you like it. Now, we talked a little bit in the beginning about reaching out to recruiters, which I always say that's the best thing to do anyway, simply because they got the pathway to at least to the hiring manager. It's a good way to go past the red tape. So if you can get a meeting with them beforehand, it's perfect. What is going on? Everything's going off. Okay, it's nothing. But you said you want to start from the bottom.
Yeah, I think we should start from the bottom because it get a little spicy once we get a little closer to the top.
Start it. So what you trying to start from?
Maybe leaders view talent. That was one of yours.
You think so? I think, Because that one might be a little more drawn out.
I can hit him with the Arapahoe. Is that how you say it? Hmm. Please.
Did you spell it? Hold on. Did you?
I spelled it right.
That's how they spelled it?
Yeah.
Really?
Like, I swear. Yeah.
Because you know, there's.
I'm looking right now.
You know, it's Arapahoe Road.
Exactly.
But it's not spelled like that.
It's definitely not spelled like that. So I hope I'm saying it right. It's spelled Arapahoe. I think I said it right. Okay, so I guess let's get into it. So this article basically states that residents in Arapahoe County, Colorado, who use the Code Red emergency alert system are being urged to update their passwords. The reason is due to a legacy database of the Code Red system, which was the target of a cyber attack. So in that attack, some user data was stolen. The types of data are going to be what we typically see: name, addresses, emails, phone numbers, also passwords that were actually tied to those Code Red accounts. There's not been any evidence that the stolen data has been, you know, publicly made available, but the county has been transitioning away from Code Red to use another system called Rave Alert System that they're saying has better reliability and security. Now, why do we care? Why does this matter? Passwords were stolen. So if any user reused, which I'm sure there were plenty, if any of those users reused the same password on their other services, then their risk of compromise, that it just continues to go up. Now, obviously, I said personal data was stolen, which, of course, can lead to identity theft. You have phishing, more targeted attacks, social engineering, and then also the legacy system that they have. So when we think about legacy systems, I tell my students this all the time, legacy means old. So when you hear the term legacy, think this is old. This is OG. What's a good analogy to use right there? Something that's old that people can quickly think about when they think of legacy.
VHS tapes.
There we go. Old. Still prevalent, maybe somewhere, but it's old. Now, legacy systems, if you're not aware, they have weaker security. So what this case actually highlights is just some ongoing risk that we typically see when it comes to using older infrastructure. So even though that data hasn't been publicly released, the fact that it was taken means it could be traded or sold, so the threat is still there. Now, I recommend users to change their password on their Code Red account immediately if you've not already done so. And if you use that same password everywhere, change it everywhere. Make sure you have MFA enabled if you can do so on any of your critical accounts. So think about your email account, maybe your financial institution if you haven't already. And make sure you're monitoring any activity. So you can, most times with most services, sign up for login notifications or text messages to notify you of unusual login attempts. I know Google doesn't play. They gonna double check and say, is you sure this is you? And then also be on alert for phishing because, again, a lot of those credentials, name, address, phone number, so on, a lot of that was compromised. So be diligent in checking your emails and just being careful on links and things that you're clicking on that may seem legitimate, but they could, in fact, be a phishing attack. What else do I have here? Really, I think what I wanted to talk about here was just using older infrastructure for emergency alerts. Like, obviously, I'm sure that's not something that they just wanted to do. It costs a lot of money to migrate over to, you know, more modern infrastructure, but that does really highlight risk due to the scale and the scope of that being a public trust thing, right? This is the, if you're not familiar with the code, what it is, Code Red is what will send out, you know, like there's a tornado coming or there's severe weather. It's that same type of alerting system. So if we think about if that is compromised and someone can go in and tell us that, you know, something's going on that's not really happening and causing panic. I just think that that's a good thing to kind of highlight there. But all in all, Code Red was compromised and they're working on migrating to a more modern infrastructure.
Interesting that you said about like not having the right alerting in place, because I believe the company is, I want to make sure I say the right name. I didn't put it on here. But we may get into it. It is, Citus AMC. So they had something similar like that where they found out they were the compromise and they didn't know anything about it. But while you're talking about fishing, we might as well go into the credential harvesting one I have. And it's simply where it's really funny. Let me see. Let me close this out and hit check. Let's open this link. But pretty much everybody has seen where you get a fake phishing email where it's acting like it's Microsoft. And instead of it being the actual M, they put an RN together and you got to squint to look at it. And so if you look at it fast. Yeah.
So what is typo squatting, right?
Yeah, kind of. It's actually called something else. But typo squatting in a sense too, because typo squatting would be like, if it's Microsoft.com, it might be Microsoft.word.com or something. Or instead of Microsoft, maybe one of the O's would be an O or something like that. Something like that, right? Well, not an O, a
but
zero.
Just like, or yeah, just another character that looks similar. Yeah.
But, and I'm going to put this picture on here, where in the phishing link from the header, how they have it send as, it'll look like it's Microsoft. It'll say no reply at Microsoft.com, but you really got to pay attention to it. And you really got to pay attention to what's happening in the thing. Now, y'all see me laughing because I'm looking at the picture. And it's funny because it's like password reset request. And I know that's not something they'll send you. So you gotta look real hard.
Oh my goodness. That's why you gotta be careful. That's exactly why you gotta be careful. Because I'm seeing what my eyes want to see, right? Not what's actually there. That's
Yeah, that typically happens a lot, but also that's why the contents of what's in the email always matters as well as what are you seeing. So it says a sophisticated phishing campaign is currently leveraging a subtle typographical trick. There we go, typographical. To bypass user vigilance, deceiving victims into handing over sensitive login credentials. Attackers utilize the domain Microsoft.com to impersonate the tech giant. By replacing the letter M with a combination of R and N, fraudsters create a visual doppelganger that is nearly indistinguishable from a legitimate domain at a casual glance. And you're also right, too. So I was wrong. This technique known as typo squatting relies heavily on the font rendering used in modern email clients and web browsers. When placed closely together, the kerning between R and N often mimics the structure of the letter M, fooling the brain into autocorrecting the error.
You heard how I said fool in the brain, because for real.
Harley Sugarman, CEO of Anagram, recently highlighted this specific vector, noting that emails often mirror the official logo, layout, and tone of legitimate Microsoft correspondence. So, yeah, sometimes what I'll do if I'm not sure if it's a legitimate Microsoft email or not, I'll actually look up, like, the domains and stuff, because you'll have somebody have something like that. It might be not no reply to Microsoft. It may say something else, very similar to do not reply or no reply or something. So the effectiveness of this attack vector lies in the subtly on high resolution desktop monitors. The discrepancy might be visible to a keen observer, but the brain's tendency to predict text often masks the anomaly. And you know what? That's right. Because have you ever seen somebody misspell something that they text you or something, or left out a word, but your brain filling the gap, so you already know what they're talking about? So,
but that it's just innately in our nature to do that, which is why you got to slow down.
Yeah. The threat becomes even more acute on mobile devices, where screen real estate is limited and the address bar often truncates the full URL. Attackers exploit this by registering these lookalike domains to facilitate credential phishing, vendor invoice scams, and internal HR impersonation campaigns. So we got to stop right there, because I've seen that before in the past. Of you got typo squad, and then you got somebody. It's actually a little bit more complicated.
But the gag is that when it comes to using email filtering solutions, right, whatever it may be you're using, user education is the only thing that can prevent that from happening, because it's not. You know, like, that domain is registered to someone.
Yeah, well, the thing is, like you said, looking fast. Two, these things have a high
safety tips would probably pull it would say something. If you are using a solution that can provide you with that, it'll say something like, this looks like somebody that you've communicated, or because Google has gotten better with that, or Gmail has gotten better with that in emails. Yeah. I'm starting to see tips from them for personal Gmail, domains.
Really, I mean, you can set it up enterprise-wide. However, like, so Proofpoint, if anybody don't know what Proofpoint is really a email security company where they are pretty much the buffer in between email probably going straight to you or not. So it's like
it's gonna scan it and do its thing.
Yeah. So if Destiny wants to send me an email, this thing right here is Proofpoint. Proofpoint looks at everything and scans it and see if it's legitimate or not, and then decides to send it to me or not.
Yeah.
Now Proofpoint has these different tools: Proofpoint Trap, Proofpoint Tap. Proofpoint Tap will look at it and say, "Hey, you don't really message this person a lot. You should look into this."
Exactly.
And it'll stop it. But even going through that. That is on an enterprise-wise. I believe these people are hitting people at home.
No, that's what I'm saying. Because a lot of those capabilities that we see on the enterprise side are not necessarily on the personal side. But I have been seeing more from Google.
And it'll be cool. And I may, like, if I have time to edit this, I'm going to probably put a B-roll right here of a tool. I made a video on this before, and I'm trying to link it right here. It's called SquareX. And it's actually gotten better. It's pretty much a disposable browser, so an online sandbox that you can use. So whenever you're not sure about a link or whatever it is, it can integrate with Gmail and I believe Outlook as well. So you can just hover over something and it'll say open in US East 1 or whatever. Like, I know it's ran on the back end of AWS. So now it's going to open. It's going to show you if it's a credential harvester or not, or if it's something malicious. It'll open there and on your browser and help you stay protected. And so it's one of the cheap things that you can do. Don't take no time to do it versus clicking on it and not being a pro and then putting information in. Sorry about that.
I will say, if you're focusing in on email security at work, go look at your settings and see if you have, because people have, they buy these solutions and they don't turn the things on to make life easier for them and their users. So go in and check and see if you have, I mean, everything might not need to be turned on, depending on the culture, whatever's going on there. But go look and see if there are some things that you can advocate to say this will help us reduce X, Y, and Z. If we were tips, for example, you have to turn that on.
Yeah. Well, the one of the easy things to do is that you can have approved senders, like domain lists. Yep. So like all those, the companies that you do, like your third-party companies or your four-parties, all the people that you interact with, they could be in a allow list.
And but so also, I don't think you should be doing that.
Well, that's...
Because that makes people never take their security, their email security serious.
Well, this will be at the admin level. This is like one of the ways at least sure up, okay, these people are known to email us. Because all the time, the tools don't always necessarily get it right. So, of course, you can always trust but verify.
But what I'll see is that there are 100, 200, 300, 400 domains in that list, and that's not how it's supposed to be used. It's not supposed to be a little VIP section.
Well, so I worked in companies before where you couldn't send anything externally from your email.
Yeah.
Unless,
which is what it should be.
Which, unless it was approved.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
That is a good thing. That is... You know, you give or take. But in some environments, that should be in place because what are you sending externally? And then even still, you can audit to see.
Yeah, yeah.
You can see so that you can educate your
people,
users.
I mean, of course, you're never going to tell them that you're policing what they send. Like, you know, a lot of times people are sending their...
resumes, for example.
Resumes,
or
they're sending their taxes.
Reviews or whatever.
Something like that. Yep. So, I mean, most of the time, the tools are just going to scan and make sure there's no company proprietary information
exactly.
in that.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times, if it's something like that, it's already scheduled to say, hey, you can't send it, so you need approval to send
it. And they'll get an alert, and they might contact you and be like, you know, what's going on?
That's what they typically do.
That's
what they typically do. Let's see, where were we? But, like, even the more intricate thing that people do, they would compromise somebody in the enterprise. They'll set up a type of squatter domain. Once they are able to hijack the email conversation where the money is, they'll send something like that to them, requesting a change to an invoice, and then it goes to the different domain, and then they get the money.
Yeah.
So the person who's intended to actually do the right business is not in the thread no more. They took them out. So you still think you talking to
low key man in the middle.
Yeah.
Low key.
Yeah. You still think you're talking to me, but you're talking to somebody else. That's why a little trick is one, domains, just looking at the domain, but two, most companies, this is the reason why they have you do a certain signature. A lot of attackers are too sloppy to copy the signature that you have.
Even banking though, when you like I know people don't use checks like that, but when it comes to your signature, you have a signature card on file with your bank. And they will go in and look at, let's say you just deposited a check, you never do. They're going to go look at that signature to make sure that it matches. And if it's off, they're not going to let it go through.
The issue with the process that I'm talking about, reason why it failed, it wasn't at the company I was working for. It was for a company that they do business with. They fell victim to it.
No, and that's usually what happens because you might have your security intact internally, email wise, but they don't over here.
Yeah. Well, and then
in that allow list, you put somebody in that allow list, you're basically saying trust everything that comes from them.
Well, no, I mean, you still trust it, but verify. But it's like it has to be some reason that we're, if not, because a lot of people they'll be just like get marked as spam off top just because of so many domains. So that's another reason why it was just you won't see it or it didn't come in. But on this instance, the person at the company I was working for at the time, they said, hey, I ain't never emailed this person this or that, which led us to say, okay, let's go look at this thread. Mm-hmm. And that's when you're using the actual ethical part of using a Microsoft Threat Explorer or Purview to go through and look exactly what transpired. And I was like, there it is right there.
Do you think it would be good for people who are just trying to figure out? I think email security, even just for yourself, is something good that you can put down that you're managing, you know? Like, if you, like you said, you're going in, you're taking a look at those domains, looking at the, analyzing the headers is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
You can start doing that on your own personal email.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. I think it's one way.
It is going to be different, though, than what you'll see on an enterprise level.
Yes and no. They still do the same sloppy stuff. Some people, like, unless, like, see, like I said, the more intricate things is you compromise a third party, and now you message my company with something, and then we like, oh, okay, this is a credential harvester right here. Let's go ahead and get you out of there, bud. So, I don't know. It's pretty much like that. I want to see if they have anything else on here for people. Because I like this. It's kind of like educating people on what they can look for. So, I'm going to try to put all these pictures on here. Let's see. Defending against these homoglyph and typo-squatted attacks requires a shifting user behavior rather than relying solely on automated filters. Security experts advise that users must expand the full sender address before interacting with any unsolicited email. Hovering over hyperlinks to reveal the actual destination URL or long pressing the link on a mobile device can expose the deception before a connection is made.
Okay.
Furthermore, analyzing email headers, specifically the reply to field, can reveal if a scammer is routing responses to an external, uncontrolled inbox. In scenarios involving unexpected password reset requests, the safest course of action is to ignore the email link entirely and navigate directly to the official service via a new browser tab. Organizations are encouraged to rehearse these identification scenarios to stop teams from reflexively clicking on familiar-looking notifications. So they have letter combination for Microsoft.com, and they're showing how people use the R and N to mimic the M, or they do the number swapping. So that's what I was talking about earlier, whereas Microsoft, they replaced one of the O's with a zero, hyphenation. This is the one I'm talking about. So adding legitimate sounding subdomains or suffixes. So Microsoft-support.com.
Oh, yeah.
And TLD switching, using a different top-level domain, dropping the M. And so they did Microsoft.co. So those are some visual examples that you could see where you'll see attackers try different things to get you to believe they're like the actual person. Like,
I'll be happy when people understand a little bit better how chaotic falling for a phishing attack can really be to your life, especially in your main inbox where you're getting all your emails, your bank statements, your credit card. Like, it.
Yeah. You get into that, then you get into the scammers. Hey, your IP address is something. We can fix it. Like, you know, the fake Microsoft people. So, like I said, my grandma, she could have just unplugged the computer and the internet. So, y'all ain't getting Nathan.
I ain't mad at her. At least she ain't falling for it.
It'd be fun to do if we could do it on Patreon or something. But, like, how fun would it be to watch, like, Beekeeper and react to, like, Beekeeper?
That would be fun. Like, we could do, a watch party.
At least that probably... interaction of like, yo, this is what, I gotta see how long it is. Cause you know, do fair use and all the copyright strike stuff. But I wanna see how long it is because people could react to what happened when that lady got, they took that money from her.
Just up into that part?
Yeah.
Let me see. How long is the Beekeeper movie? It says 105 minutes.
So that's what, an hour and 35?
Yeah. That was a good movie. I really enjoy him.
It was an hour and 35. 60 minutes. So you got...
Don't have me doing math.
Yeah, that's 135. All right.
Okay.
I had to make sure.
What's his name? The main character.
Jason Statham.
Oh, I just really adore
you
him.
You ever heard Godfrey do his impersonation?
No.
You know who Godfrey is, right?
Yes, the black dude, tall, skinny, comedian.
He ain't skinny.
He is a little bit. He's medium.
He would know how to do everybody. He was a Lethal Shooter. He was doing, his funniest thing is the Steve Harvey.
Steve Harvey, I've seen him do Steve Harvey.
And he do Trump real good, too.
I like when Jamie Foxx do it. He be eating everybody up.
I don't know if he hit that. What you say? I'm from Cleveland. I can't do it like he do it.
From Buffed Up?
Nah. He say...
Me saying Buffed Up is ghetto. He's not even talking about it. Bye.
Because you from there.
Please.
All white Buffies. That's my movie, right? I was telling my cousin about that the other day. I said, dawg, you've seen Buffed Up before. You've seen Buffed Up.
I'm from Ohio. That's what I thought he was talking about.
He said, I'm from Columbus.
That's what he said. Yeah. That's what I thought you was talking about.
Survey says.
You got K-Packers down. He jumped at the mic. I just said.
He jumped at the mic.
Wait, K-Packers.
Survey said.
So he was in.
You know, Steve Harvey like, I'm going to look at that answer. Survey said.
Why is this nigga always surprised? Yeah. Like, nigga, like you this. Know what they said.
That shit.
Oh man.
Oh no.
That fucking Steve Harvey be like. He be like. What your ass say?
The way they got the captions on the laugh is sending me.
I mean your ass. I mean she was like. She said. I said the top fruit. She said. Oh, hell no. She said.
They on it,
oh, oh. She was like.
I'm him turning around in the chair by.
I'm just saying, y'all.
Now, that's funny.
Him.
When he said, and the answer is, that's the funniest part.
Man, he's him. All right, guys. So, underrated show. Y'all know I watch the TV shows. Jay Farrow. You know who Jay Farrow is? He's been on Saturday Night Live.
Sure.
He's really good at impersonations. And he had a show called Black Famous. And he, when I tell you, he be sounding just like the people. Him and, who was that? Matter of fact, I think him and Jamie actually did a...
I haven't seen him before.
Yeah,
but he looked funny, though.
He know how to do, like, everybody. Like, he sound like, you close your eyes and you like,
think that's him.
Real Smith. But, no, I hope y'all got a laugh at that Survey Says. I think, is that yours? The AI Reshaping Entry-Level Careers?
It is. Let's get into it. So, when it comes to AI. So, the article is AI is reshaping entry-level careers. So, what happens to that talent pipeline? So, this article kind of had me squinting a little bit. We're talking about how AI is essentially shaking up entry-level cybersecurity and what that means for the next wave of folks that are coming in. So obviously, for a long time now, we have analysts, right, that have been doing the grunt work. They're doing triage. They're staring at the logs. They're performing those investigations, really just the stuff that builds up that intuition that you have. And when you think about in the past when we were working in office, these were the people who were able to learn the difference between what is noise, right, and then what is a real threat. And if you work in a SOC, you know exactly what that means. Now, AI is scooping all of that up. And what I mean by that is that we have tools today that are able to parse those logs, that are able to auto-categorize those alerts, summarize the incidents, even recommend what your next steps would should be by just clicking on whatever it is, you know, what they call that, a one-click fix. And so when you think about efficiency, that's where we're seeing some of that automation, that piece come in. But the problem is the same task that AI is replacing are the same tasks that people use to struggle through to get their education in, their learning, their experience, right? So the article actually calls it out. They say that companies are literally saying, where we used to hire 5 junior analysts, we now hire 2. And about half believe that AI will reduce the need for entry-level roles altogether. So what does that mean? It means that pipeline is thinning out. And folks who do get in, and we talk about this all the time, are expected to start at a higher level because the basics are already automated. I'm going to say that one more time. So folks who do get in are expected to start at a higher level because a lot of those basics are automatic. By the time you get to the alert, everything is there available for you, which you used to have to go find a lot of that information. But these tools are making things a bit more efficient for folks that are in the SOC. Now, when you think about being new to cybersecurity, instead of you being able to learn to crawl, they're basically telling you that you kind of need to come in jogging a little bit. On the flip side, that can absolutely be an advantage if you are intentional. AI can then become a teaching tool, not just something that helps you be more productive. You have those junior analysts that can watch how AI is actually solving things, and then they can start to ask those questions like, why did it do that, to help them pick up on things a bit faster. But companies are already reworking their programs, their ranges, their attacks, all of that hands-on stuff that really builds up the foundation that AI actually can't give you. So I feel like the takeaway here is that AI isn't killing entry-level cyber. It's actually just changing it. We don't need less talent. We need talent that's trained differently. So instead of you being trained to walk, you maybe need to be trained to run when you come in through the door. And we talked about this, I think, on the last pod. So more cloud, more identity, more automations, more critical thinking, which is a skill set, unfortunately, that a lot of people don't use to their advantage. They think about the technical skills and they leave out those soft skills. But if you're a newbie and you're listening, don't try to be that human filter. Focus on understanding the systems, understanding attackers, and how these tools actually think. And if you're a company, you cannot outsource all of your security and give it to AI. We've seen that not necessarily work out in the best. Now, it is good to still have that human element to touch and go in and confirm, okay, this is in fact a threat. We do need to go ahead and remediate this, whatever it may be. But AI is just shifting the ground under us. If we adapt our training, our hiring, our mentoring, if we look at these things a lot differently, we can actually come out with a stronger workforce and not a weaker one. I just am a little bit frustrated with the rhetoric that cybersecurity is stealing all of the degrees when it's a little bit more, or not degrees, the roles, when it's just a little bit more to it than people say after they say that statement.
Yeah. So a couple things. AI, this is an interesting thing because I know you have machine learning AI. Like, this thing has been happening for a while. So anybody who has been on the blue team, you have a tool like a CrowdStrike or Sentinel or Tanium or any other EDR tools, they use a lot of machine learning and they are constantly evolving and saying, hey, we typically see this in here, so it's connected to threat intel. It's big business. It's using a lot of AI to prevent a lot of stuff already.
It's a lot of stuff feeding into it.
Which still takes you to go in and look at the detection and make sure that it didn't miss anything. So I think the big issue is with them trying to automate all the level one stuff is a lot of people may not get the chops to even understand how to really thoroughly go through and investigate something to where now you pretty much are the middleman. Like, hey, I guess it's an incident. Let me go ask somebody.
Exactly.
I think that.
No, I see where you're going with it. I agree.
I think that could be something that's happening. Now, granted, it could be cool where maybe now a lot of people may not be in SOC analysts. Now all these people are responders. Mm-hmm. So now they're figuring out how to fix problems. Oh, this was compromised. I got to get offline. I got to get a forensics copy of this, a snapshot of this, and I got to go through this data, and I got to look for these IOCs. Now, it may get to that point where now instead of that, you're learning how to be an incident responder early on, and then you also got to work on the soft skills because one of the things people don't talk about a lot, in the SOC, you do a lot of talking to people.
That's what I said. It's and it's different when you're in a sock and now you're remote, right? You're not, you ain't right here. I can't, can you come here real quick and look at my screen or can you help me understand what's going on? And in the culture in the remote world is not, like I know some jobs have just like a bridge that you can just jump on all day. You know, you kind of in here hanging out with your coworkers if you need.
Most people got like a little team chat.
Exactly. Or no, like a meeting. Forget mm-hmm. the chat. Like a meeting that y'all can just pop into if you have questions. But that requires you to share your screen and also to be a little bit more vulnerable than you would feel if you were in office. I feel like it feels a little bit more vulnerable to ping and ask a question.
It depends, though, because, listen, if I could tell you about some stuff I know about these horror stories of, like, people cherry-picking alerts or just sitting on stuff or really some other way got the job, didn't know what they was doing, and skating, like, this long and then learn how to do the job, it's a lot. Like,
what's the dude from the show we just watched?
Are you talking about?
Yeah, him. Reasonable Doubt. Yes.
Yeah, the one with Lewis. Yes. Yeah. No, he wasn't trying to learn it.
That's what I'm saying.
He was BSing.
Thank you. But it's people like that.
Oh, no. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. Because I know of a situation where a person that before I left a company, I personally, me and everybody else pretty much said yes to him. Because he was like, you know what? Hey, everybody else be, we've seen like white people get jobs that shouldn't have work with us. Like for sure. I was like, you know what? Give him a try. They weren't the strongest, but we liked them and we felt like he'd be doing all right. 4 years later, that guy's completely regressed and he's no longer with the company.
Regressed is crazy.
Yeah. And I was telling my friend, I was just like, man, I wish I could, like some stuff I'm not supposed to know. So I was like, but I wish I could talk to him. Like, yo, we went on a limb and got you on.
And now
you're going to make it harder for other people that look like us to get on.
Yep.
And I don't think people would be understanding. They'd be very selfish with that, not understanding all the red tape it is of
today,
of qualified people.
Today.
All the stuff that we've been talking about with the hidden market, all that stuff is going on, and it's people inside the org where we're fighting like, nah, we need diversity on a team. Like, for the longest, I was trying to get women on a team because they do pay attention to detail. Women are the number one lurkers.
You always got to be shady.
They are.
We do.
Women have been best at lurking like, since forever. That's why they make such good recruiters. Like, for real. But in all seriousness, if you get an opportunity, make the most out of it. That's what I'll say. Make the most out of your opportunity. Don't squander it because opportunities are not plentiful right now.
Please say it again. Like it's so hard for people to land right now, and just don't be the person that it ends with you because you didn't do a good job, right? You want to do a good, hopefully you want to do good enough of a job so that somebody believes in giving someone else a chance, right? That's how I kind of want to approach it. I want to knock it out the park.
Yeah.
So that you like, oh, yeah, I want to do this again. We might get some more good talent, or we don't know what can come of this opportunity. And, yeah.
Yeah. Nah, man. But to lighten the mood again, our good friend, Dr. Lee, he sent me all type of stuff on
Lee?
Mm-hmm. He sent me all type of stuff on LinkedIn. And he sent me this post that I thought was funny. It's titled, and it's from Reddit. Wow, really? Someone at work stole my chair, so I had them arrested.
What?
Yeah. It says, I got a new job in sales working for a company that sells access control systems, CCTV systems, etc. The chair in my cubicle was uncomfortable as fuck. He said AF, but I had to just go ahead and throw it in there because I failed him on this. So one day, no, what did it say? So I don't know. They say, so one day three, I guess he meant on day three, I brought in my own Herman Miller Arion chair. On day four, it was missing. I looked around and another sales rep was sitting in it. I asked for it back, but he basically told me to F off. How would y'all feel if somebody told you to F off? Somebody
had your chair costs
a lot. Anything with Herman Miller costs a lot.
Just so the people know, you know, for context.
He's going to talk about how much the chair costs.
More than $1,000.
Hold on, like Stephen said, $1,000. I went and spoke to the owner of the company. He told me that the chairs aren't reserved. They are first come, first served. I explained that I own the chair and it cost me $1,800. He told me that I need to come in early if I want that chair.
Ain't no way. For that price, please.
He lucky.
Don't even breathe on the chair.
He lucky he was that tolerant with him stealing his chair.
Nah, facts.
The next day, the same guy was sitting in it when I got to the office. I told him to give it back or I was going to call the cops. He refused, so I called the cops. It was quite the scene, but in the end, he admitted that he took my $1,800 chair. I was prepared. I had the receipt which shows the serial number. Yes, Ariane chairs have serial numbers. They asked me if I want to press charges. My new boss said I'd be terminated if I had him arrested. So I said, absolutely, I want to press charges. My new boss fired me on the spot, so I carried my chair out with me as I was leaving. And yes, the cops arrested the dude who took my chair. He admitted to it. The dude who took my chair has been in the industry for about 15 years, but he's going to lose his security license, which means he won't be able to work in the industry. He's going to lose his job. I don't give a F. He shouldn't have stolen my chair. Am I the asshole for making this dude lose his job? No.
It was all petty. It was petty from the jump. You knew that was a nice chair. And first of all, if you game, you know how much chairs cost. If you work from home and you have a nice chair, chairs are not cheap. A good chair.
Even fundamentally. He knew for a fact that wasn't a chair in his cubicle, that he took it from somewhere
else. Exactly. But you knew it wasn't a regular chair is what I'm saying. You knew that chair cost some money, and you knew that you did not. Like you said, he lucky that they didn't get him on that first day. For real, for real.
He lucky that he was dealing with a person that had a lot of patience. Because a lot of people going to lose their job over an $1,800 chair.
Imagine going home and having to explain that.
You can't.
Imagine going home and having to explain that.
Part of me feel like this ain't real. But part of me believe it could be real.
I believe it because people are just crazy.
But people also know who they feel like they're going to pick on.
Well, you got picked back on, and now so, your career is on the line. And he been in the game for about, 15 years. Yeah. He probably got a family. He probably got responsibilities, right? It's okay. I just saw something. PhD. Dr. Ree just posted something that said how important it is to have emotional intelligence and to take the high road. This is a prime example. Let me find a post.
Hold on. Let me find a post. Funny that you said that on Threads.
I seen that. I seen something on there too.
No, did you see this woman was saying talking about Cam Newton? And she said, because I wanted to make sure. I told her that they got it. Because I wanted to make sure I wasn't tripping.
I gotta find a post.
She said Cam Newton has no emotional IQ, bro. Swear, the fake deep is irritating. Can't take him seriously on his podcast. So I said, just use EQ instead. She said, what do you mean? I said, EQ is emotional intelligence. So that's why I assume you're referring to in your original post. And she said, I'm aware of the definition. Emotional IQ or EIQ and EQ are synonymous. And I looked it up. I've never seen EIQ before. I've seen.
What is EIQ?
I don't know. It's supposed to be emotional intelligence. But people normally use EI or EQ.
I've seen EQ, EI.
Exactly. So instead of arguing, I just said, oh, okay. But after that, I looked up. Because at that time, I wasn't trying to just be right. But I just really felt like, she should have just put EQ. Because the way she worded it, I was like, well, why don't you say emotional IQ? So I was like, just say EQ.
IQ. Yeah, the IQ at the end. Yeah.
But.
Okay, let me read this. What Ree said. Ree the cyber boss. One of the biggest lessons I've learned in cybersecurity is that being unbothered is not a personality trait. It's a strategy, emotional discipline, and it's knowing when to disengage from noise so you can stay aligned with your purpose, your performance, and your peace. In high-pressure environments, the pull to react, defend, or explain yourself can be strong, but unbothered leaders move differently. Taking the high road is an extension of that discipline. It's not about being passive, but being intentional. You can address issues without absorbing someone else's frustration or insecurity. You can hold boundaries without matching energy, and you can correct the problem without becoming part of the drama. Over time, that discipline builds credibility. People trust leaders who remain consistent, grounded, and solution-oriented, especially when things get challenging. This is the quiet part of leadership that people don't talk about. Letting go of unnecessary conflict gives you back the time, mental space, and creativity you need to lead well. Protecting your peace isn't soft. It's strategic. It's sustainable. And it's how you create longevity in your career and in your impact. 10 out of 10.
But hold on. Didn't y'all say, I am the drama?
Not at work. But you don't want to be that person. And again,
but hold on, but sometimes
he wasn't wrong.
But see, sometimes you don't want to be a person, but sometimes you gotta be.
Sometimes you do have to be the person, but you have to be strategic about how you become, how you handle the situation.
I only say this is because men and women, some of the stuff is similar, but some is different. I feel like whatever about this guy seemed like he was a person you could pick on. Mm-hmm. I feel like he could have pulled the dude to the side after everybody's around. I think the guy probably felt played that he approached him out of his chair. He probably was with people. I'm like, look, fam. This is what I'm saying.
How you feel played and you in a chair that don't belong to you?
Right. I understand that, but I'm saying, listen, this is my chair, dog. I ain't trying to cause no issues.
And that's why he went to jail.
But this is my chair. You know what I'm saying? Just don't touch it, bro. That's all it's got to be. I think that's like the second conversation you have is like, I mean, and I'm going to say, if not, you're not going to like what's going to come with you playing with my chair.
But we don't know if this happened.
I think it happened, but not like that, though. Because you got it's a certain way you're going to have to look like in the eye, like, fam, over a chair?
Over a chair. We finna start saying that. Over a chair.
What do you mean by that?
Over a $1,800 chair.
18?
I was not expecting it to be that much.
That's about what, it depends on the car, about 2-3 car notes.
Like, what?
Two, three car notes right there on that chair. You think I ain't finna send you to jail for it? Because over a certain amount, I'm feeling it anyway.
And then also just thinking about sitting correctly, ergonomics. Like, don't play with nobody's mouse, keyboard, chair, footrest. Leave people stuff alone.
Let's talk about the head honcho. He messed up by not by invalidating how he felt about his chair.
Oh, absolutely. And then also saying, because he going to get fired for it. When it was something that could potentially be a case.
It is a case.
Yeah, because they did not handle that situation correctly.
I was
wrong with
terminated because the dude stole my $1,800 chair.
Especially because he had the receipt. It'd be one thing if the chair was just there and you can't prove the chair is yours. We really sitting here debating about this chair. That's crazy.
Hey, he needs to kick up. Well, that's the people that you ever heard. You ever been driving in Texas and heard that, girl, I just got hit.
Yes.
You might call the Texas Hammer.
Is that called Cowboys?
I don't know, but I know one of the persons is the Texas Hammer.
Yeah. I've just been hit. Yeah, the radio commercial.
Speaking of, this is a segue real quick before we get into the next topic. So you know they actually started the Milagro and Megan trial.
Yes.
And so I wasn't a person that followed Armand Wiggins a lot, but he's been doing a recount of everything and really unbiased opinion. Because he's like, me and Milagro not that cool. So it's not like I'm here being biased. But he was explaining, like, yo, you can't side with Meg in this off the strength that they're going to try to attack all the new media outlets that's not biased, that don't have an agenda to push if stuff like this go through. And he was just reading the transcripts of stuff that they asked her on the stand, of how, like, she's just really singling out Milagro versus everybody else that said something about her. Like, they asked her about, hey, did you listen to all of Bigfoot? No, I don't know. I don't think she was really talking about me. Oh, did you hear Drake's song Circle Loco? And he said something about lying about the shots, but she's still a stallion. And she was like, no, I think he was just talking about a girl who's lying about shots because of a style. But it was like, you know, being willful. I mean,
I've been seeing, like, you know, just some of the recaps and stuff. I haven't really. I want to read the documents to get, yeah.
That's probably the transcripts are probably there, because that's what they do, like, for all the trials. But yeah. I knew, like, he pretty much was spot on, because, like, that's what everybody sees. Because, see, the funny thing is, with all these trials going, people are always reacting on the TLs, but they are never in the actual live streams where the people have the transcripts and stuff up and they're reading it word for word. So they're always going off of something that somebody misconstrued.
But that's just people in general. People always want to give an opinion about something that you didn't even look into it. You watched one clip, and you came up with whatever you came up with. And that's why it's important that reading is fundamental. Read so that you can be knowledgeable, so that you can have an educated opinion, okay?
I think it's not, but you take reading, but also just at least take your biases out of it.
Reading and researching.
Because that's the
you
biggest
thing. You
can
be biased if you read it and you researched it. But you sound crazy saying something to somebody who actually legitimately knows what's going on because they've been doing their research.
But you can say you're biased and still say, I know, like, I'm biased on, like, certain things. I'm biased on Drake. I'm biased on, like, the Broncos, Peyton Manning.
But you also can see the other side.
I can see the other side, and I can tell you, like, I'm biased, emotional, but hey, I don't like
emotional
whatever.
IQ.
So that's the thing. Like, I hate people.
Wait, did I say it right?
Yeah.
Emotional IQ.
Emotional intelligence, emotional quotient.
I like quotient.
That's what it stands for, intelligence quotient.
EQ. There we go.
But the thing about everything is, going to wrap it up because I'm not trying to be on like this long. What they say, what Stephen A. like to say, like long diatribe and all this fun stuff, these fun words. You just really start seeing who feel a certain way about certain topics when crap like this happens and you talk about it back and forth on the timeline. You're like, oh, dang. I didn't know you feel like that. I know you would get so mad that you would, you know, block me over something that don't have nothing to do with either one of us.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, another reason why I just really stopped even talking about stuff like that on the timeline because I don't care. That's why I didn't have energy to even argue where. Back in the day, I used to. If it's going to make – I think now, if it don't make money, it don't make sense. So if I'm not going to make money from going back and forth with you on social media, 9 times out of 10, I'm not. I'll come here and sit on the podcast because, hey – this lives forever, and you're going to have to see it eventually.
I'm not going back and forth about Nathaniel. Ever.
I take you up, though, right?
Is it me? Yeah, I guess I'll go. Let's talk about looking at popular threat reports. So, have you ever been told that there are threat reports that you can go look at that are put out by different companies? What is the point? Why does it matter? So, one of them that I always check out because I really love the way that they lay it out is the Verizon Data Breach Investigation Report. They call it the DBIR.
Mm-hmm.
Learned about that in grad school. But this is almost, is it fair to say this is kind of like an industry standard? Everybody really cites it, is what I'm saying. But it breaks down real breach data across different industries. It looks at different attacker motivations, common techniques, timelines, all that good stuff. So when it comes to that, that data obviously is real. It's not guessed. It breaks down which industries are getting clapped by the bad actors. Now, you also have CrowdStrike that has a global threat report as well. They give you a front row seat into some attacker behavior. So e-crime trends, nation state operations, zero-day exploitations, how fast attackers actually move. So that report is really telling you who's moving fast. Is it Russia, China, Iran, whoever it is? Mandiant has the M-Trends report, which is the incident response GOAT, if we think about it that way. Their report tells you exactly what's happening when companies call 911 because they're already breached. So this is what companies kind of don't want to admit publicly. So they break down the dwell time, so how long attackers live in your system, and it shows what the incident response team sees after the breach. IBM also has a cost of data breach report, which is just straight money talk. So it tells companies how much breaches actually cost, how much they lost in business, the recovery, post-incident response, ransom, legal fees, all of that. So that, I feel like, is good from a CISO's perspective to be able to justify budget, maybe, for example. And then you have the Digital Defense Report by Big M. So obviously Big M has a ton of visibility across everything, but it does include an analysis of nation-state activities. So if you think about ransomware, cloud attacks, AI threats, identity-based attacks, they kind of see the world from a different lens due to all of the data that they have and they're able to pull in. But why does this matter? Because you should be looking at these type of things, right? These are things that you can cite in your interviews. These are things that you can share with your teammates. These are things that you can read and digest and understand so you actually understand what's going on in the industry. Palo Alto has one, Sophos, Checkpoint. Like, the list goes on. There's so many different companies who have these reports. But I think it's important for you to think outside of a lab box and start to think a little bit more strategic on the business side and how maybe some of the things that you're finding out in these reports can shape what's happening internally within your company.
Yeah. So also, not only for CISO, but just anybody that's in the field.
Well, no, I was just saying that particular one, the finances one. Yeah.
Well, I mean.
But anybody can look at these. Any level, anyone.
Yeah. And you can look at the threat reports because you could probably try to go replicate them in your own lab and understand about those mm-hmm. things. And those third reports will also tell you about certain industries and the trends and what they see there. So if you are interviewing at a certain company that's in a certain industry, go research some of these things because they ask you about that. Or you can flip the script on them and say, hey, how are you guys preparing? Well, I was researching and I saw that such and such attack has been going hard in the finance industry. How you guys have been prepared to mitigate against that? And just go over there. And these are things that's going to set you apart because, hey, you prepped for this interview. These would be questions you ask, like, in a town hall, or you have all these different calls where you're talking to the threat intel team. Mm-hmm. They're like, okay, this guy's actually showing to pay attention to the detail piece by this question.
Yeah, it's almost like watching, or not, like reading a news article. That's basically what it is, right, in essence. But if you're trying to grow your career, doesn't matter if you've been here a while or you're brand new, I just think it's important for you to understand what are we actually defending against. And it doesn't even, read something that's outside of your industry. Expand your mindset a little bit more so you're not super siloed in that if you do want to transfer to another industry, you kind of understand some of the threats that they're facing and some of the things that are going on. So, yeah, I just thought that was important to highlight because a lot of people don't talk about those. People just look at this breach happened, this is what happened. They don't really understand the full nature.
No, for sure. And if I'm going to be honest, and I forgot what I was thinking about. Let me see, it might come back to me. The full nature. So I'll go to what you're talking about. I already talked about interviewing people in certain industries and bringing up certain things, but now you take it a step further and you bring up certain questions based on who you're interviewing with. So the company might just say, hey, the CISO cares about this because it's talking about money and how I explain the budget or whatever. You take that and they say you're interviewing with
ask
the director,
the question at the end. Yeah.
Whatever, how are you guys allocating to this? Because I'm seeing it cost this much. What are you doing? Do we have automations in play? All these different things, right? Because you're going to ask the right questions.
Or even if you can just pique their interest at the end, you're like, hey, have you ever heard? I don't even remember which. Hold on. It was the Mandiant.
Oh, speaking of, why you talking about Mandiant?
No, it was IBM. But like, say you interview me at the end. I'm like, yeah, have you ever took a look at the IBM cost of a breach report? Yeah, you know, tells you a little bit more about security just not being tech, how it has financial implications.
Yeah, so what most, from my knowledge, a lot of industries have these, I don't know if it's alliance. It's a certain thing that everybody's a part of based on what your industry is. And they share intel throughout the industry. And so they have that. So that's one of the things
they have. They have one here for CISOs that are in Dallas.
Well, I was talking about just, let's say, for instance, so J.P. Morgan, Capital One.
Like for Wells the financial
Fargo,
industry.
Bank of America. Yeah. There's this thing, what's it called? I know what it's called, but I'm trying not to say too much. I know, I'm going to type it in so I look like I looked it up. So, yeah. So, for financial industry, it's Financial Services Information Sharing Analysis Center, which is called FSISAC. And they share stuff. If they're seeing
stuff. Is this like a site or a group, a meeting, lunch?
I can read about what it do. So, FSISAC is the member-driven, not-for-profit organization that advances cybersecurity and resilience in the global financial system, protecting financial institutions and the individuals they serve. Our real-time information sharing network amplifies the intelligence, knowledge, and practices of its members for the financial sector's collective security and defense. So anybody that's in finance, they are in this thing and they're sharing stuff. They're not sharing pertinent stuff about their environment. But
exactly. But they're still sharing maybe some threats that they're seeing. Yeah. Exactly. Yep.
So that's what I was talking about earlier. But that, and you were talking about Mandiant. Mandiant actually has a channel on Google where they actually talk about threats. You can just listen to stuff like that in the morning, or you listen to us.
Change your routine up. You know, read an article in the morning from one of these that we just talked about. Put the pod on in the morning.
For sure.
Change it up.
For sure. All right, and we are back. So I don't even really need an article for this, but if everybody who's been on X, they know that Elon and them released a feature that lets you know where an account is from. Now, why this is funny to us is because you have all these divisive accounts that tweet nonsense that are nowhere in the U.S., where they're trying to do, like, gender wars.
So does it show you on the tweet or on the user's profile page?
Let me see. I'll show you right now.
And can you turn it off?
I don't know. I think it's good for it to be on there. It's not intrusive. Like, it's not got your address or anything on there.
Like, it ain't going to say the city you
tweet. So, for example, mine says, join February 2011, account based in the United States, 3 username changes, and...
Not all the business.
No, because you be having these people in India saying nigga and stuff. And anybody can see that.
Okay. Bye. I'm going to go see what mine say. Bye.
And so it was funny because you had, like, all these, like, everybody calls them, like, the K-bots and all that. Let me see if I got that like here.
Where'd you click it?
It should be. It should be, no. If you go on your profile, it should be right under, like, it should say
location. Oh, I see service. It. And there's, like, a little arrow.
Yeah.
It do say country or region. May not be accurate. They in the business. It say one of our partners has indicated that this account may be connecting via a proxy such as a VPN, which may change the country or region that is displayed on their profile. This data may not be accurate. Some internet providers may use proxies automatically without action by the user.
So, yeah, like one of KDOT Stan accounts is from India. So, look.
Life goes on. I need all my babies. Yeah, yeah. Woke up looking for the broccoli. High key, keep a whore, nami the kamasi. IP, ownership, the blueprint is by me. Mr. Get off, I get off in mop feet. When I hear music, it makes me dance. You got the music, now is your chance.
I'm screaming.
X-Trees have...
Like, but no, I think that's cool because everybody been exposing all these fraud accounts. Like, they're like, for example, you have somebody that's staying freaking... China, but posing as a black woman and saying a whole bunch of detrimental things about black women and black men, just trying to start arguments and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's why people always tell people, like, hey,
why? I mean, just looking at it, it's not as intrusive as it could be.
Yeah.
I mean, things could be a lot more intrusive, TBH.
It's one of the reasons why I don't really engage a lot of faceless accounts.
Immediately. If you don't have a profile picture, get out of here. And not even just a profile picture, like, for something like that, if there's... If your face ain't nowhere.
Because this is an account called 100K Ain't No Money. But everybody, he is a black person, I found out. But I thought he wasn't black because I was like, he say a lot of wild stuff. But he's a black dude. But I don't just like, when you have your picture up there, I was like, I don't know. Because that's how Discord is and I don't like that. Like, people got all type
Discord
of pictures on there.
Discord is very, I'm
like,
yeah.
No, show your face. Yeah. Like, I show my face, show your face. Yeah. Like, be a normal person. But I thought that was pretty funny. The dude, that was funny. The guy apologized and turned the comments off because he was getting his N words off like he was one of us.
Bye.
And that, I'm sorry guys, this is not a hip hop podcast. But that was my biggest gripe about Not Like Us. It was the people that was not like us was jamming the song, and I'm like, he talking about y'all. That one used to kill me about the whole song. I was like, y'all are idiots, bro. Like, for real. But.
I have one more. Two more.
No, go ahead. I was
no,
just going to.
It's your turn.
I wanted to talk about this one, right? Last week, we talked about the student loan debacle. And
yes.
I'll also update.
My dad texts me and asks me, like, is your degree okay?
Well, on Threads. One of my followers, what's her name? Sierra Nicole, I believe. Let me see if I got Threads on here. I do. Let me see if I can find her. And I'll get into the article. But she was basically saying, hey, they didn't really change any language about what they deem not to be professional because this was already set back in, I think, 08.
What about 08?
The same... Pretty much the same degrees that they become professional then is what was in the same language from the thing we just read.
Okay.
That's what I was trying to establish because I try to be as factual as I can. Like, of course, we reading off on articles and stuff like that. But let me see if she put it on her LinkedIn. Because I knew we were friends on, what's it called? Let's see. Crazy. Wendy's, look at this.
I'm screaming.
I should. You know what's funny? I should have had my.
We should have worn. That would have ate, especially because it's the Thanksgiving episode.
Yeah, I should have put my quarter zip on for sure. I was rushing, so I didn't think about even mentioning it to you. I can't find it, but that'll be something I may try to post the link for or whatever. But anyway, this ties into this of why we said, honestly. Kids, and I'm calling you kids because I really feel like if your age is still in the teens, you're a kid. Don't let your parents be the only person or the person that know about whatever your loans are and how much they're going to be in their repay back. You need to look into that. It's precisely the reason why I chose the undergrad school I chose because I said, hey, LSU costs more than that school and it's farther away. I didn't have no whip or nothing like that. I said, I'm probably going to spend my money going there. Let me go to this school that's like an hour and 15 away. I made that decision because I know also Baylor was reaching out to me at the time too. I was like, yeah, I'm going to do something that's more feasible for me.
I feel so strongly about this, and this is why I chose the school that I chose. So all of my friends went to Michigan State. My best friend went to U of M. I was not getting in U of M back then. I probably could have gotten to Michigan State, but when I took the tour and I realized how big it was and how much they do not give you in support versus the school that I chose. So the reason why I chose the school that I started at, which was Grand Valley State University, Anchor Up, but they have one of the best packages, and that's how I look at school. You can get free tutoring in any subject. Free tutoring, one, there's a math center, there's a writing lab, there's a speech lab where you can go if you have to do a presentation. Biology, chemistry, you name it, you can do group tutoring. Mm-hmm. It's free. My friends who were going to Michigan State were having to pay for tutors.
Wow.
Because that wasn't a part of the package. Also, at Grand Valley, you got into all of the home games free for any sport. That's Same still a thing.
You showed your card.
And the bus was free on campus. So you didn't have to pay to get on the bus to get wherever you needed to get across campus. So I feel like you should also, especially if you're coming from like a family where you don't have a lot of support, I feel like you should do your research and try to get the most bang for your buck. And I was so glad that I chose that school because I got tutoring nearly every semester. I went to the Writing Center to learn how to cite papers correctly, APA, MLA, you know, those different formats. But I feel wholeheartedly about that, near and dear to my heart, because I did the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I miss them days. I miss being in a college town because they were catered to the college students. So, like, there's this pizza. If my people from Louisiana know about Johnny's Pizza. They had if you've been to Ruston, that's where LA Tech was. They had a Tech Party Pizza. It was like $10, and it was very good. But I know y'all ain't care about that. If you're from Ruston, you know, go Bulldogs. I think they bowl bound, so shout out to them. But this article is, she graduated college without knowing what she owed. When she finally saw the number 4 years later, it was so big she didn't want to pay it. That reminded me of you. Like, this is real?
What?
Yeah.
How she ain't know?
Tracy, a teacher in Dallas, graduated from college in 2016, thinking she had some student debt, but not really knowing how much. Her mom had always handled the finances, so Tracy trusted that things were under control. I knew I had student loans eventually coming out of college, but she kind of handled all that. She said on the recent Ramsey social, I guess she called it today, Ramsey show. But I think the whole issue is that parents
need to back off. You need to back off. You need to let them figure it out. No, they need to figure it out. That's a part of going to college and being an adult and figuring out how to handle business, whether it's financial aid, whether it's your doctor, your insurance. It's a part of you.
Because I guarantee she didn't. I want to know what school the girl went
to. I was just about to say, what is the degree in? Education?
You're going to find out. The shocking truth arrived in 2020. It wasn't until 2020 that Tracy finally got access to her loan information. Her mom handed over the login details, and that was the moment it all became real. That's when I got the login, she said. At that point, it was kind of one of those lunch situations, like, this is yours now. The number she saw floored her, nearly $140,000 in private student loan debt. Ugh. It just feels like they're never really going to get paid off, Tracy admitted. Over the past several years, she's managed to bring it down to $106,000, but the process has been slow and draining. Man, she still paid off a good bit.
That's a lot of money.
She paid out $34,000 in several years. Yeah, I think so. Adding to the pressure, Tracy and her husband, who is also a teacher earning about $62,000 a year, are juggling other debts. There's his $30,000 in federal student loans, so at least he did better. He had what she had.
But them private, them interest rates.
But this is the thing, though. I don't know why parents do that. Like, if you don't have the money to pretty much substantially help them go to school, don't put them in no, don't sign off on no loans.
Them parent plus, yeah.
Whatever they is, them private loans, and then have them stuck on the hook for paying it, knowing what they're going to school for. You have more wisdom than they have.
Knowing what they're going to school for is key.
It ain't like she finna go be a doctor, a lawyer, a nurse, where you can start traveling and make $10,000 a week.
I'm just thinking maybe that's also room and board. It has to be.
Even still, that's a lot of
money. That's a lot of money.
You could have took that same amount of money and just hypothetically, this, you know what, students, and don't, this is not financial advice. If you are probably going to get more money than you need from your refund, find an ETF to invest it in and put it in that and just start letting it do it. Even if you don't put no more money in from, like, let's say 10 years ago, you may have money to pay some stuff out because it's going to grow. That's what I probably would do. If I know now what I know now, back then, Robinhood's and the M1 finances and Fidelity apps wasn't as accessible as it is now to you, I would probably put some of my refund check in an investment account. Not financial advice. Don't listen to me. But hey, she said they got $30,000. He has $30,000 in federal student loans, a $19,000 car loan, and a $115,000 loan on their tiny home on wheels. Mm. Monthly costs include $1,000 mortgage payment and $700 in land rent. Yeah, they planning on that land rent. So, I grew up in a mobile home. So you also had a mortgage for your mobile home. Then you had a lot note. Mm. So
just for parking there, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, it wasn't parking because it wasn't like an RV. It's stationary there. But yeah,
but that's a monthly fee?
Yeah. So they can always raise it or lower it up.
Yeah.
So I think
so. It's like your low key, like your property tax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's at worst because you're not getting any. It doesn't appreciate like a house. So it's really a bad deal in the long run. And that's what they probably going to figure out about their tiny home. They probably was just better off. They would have been better off just renting an apartment. To save that $700 and put it towards some loans. When she called into the show, Tracy asked the question many people in her shoes have wondered, is it ever okay to just default on student loans? No, co-host Jay Warshaw said plainly, if you were 88 and on death's door, I might say yes if you had no money. But you sound young, and it seems like there's a lot of life ahead of you to try to make this happen. I disagree.
I'm screaming.
Like, think about it. Why is loans the only thing you cannot get off in bankruptcy?
You can't? Your student loans aren't included?
No.
Oof.
Like, especially they private. Like, I feel like that's predatory. I feel like the child.
I feel like there needs to be some regulation in the practices of financial institutions, especially when it comes to giving a 17-year-old, 18-year-old full discretion to come and get a $100,000 loan for you. Like, that's crazy. There should be some limitations to it. There should be, for this school, this is the max we can give you per what the tuition cost. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but not only that, the child was going to school and never knew how much the loans was.
But
technically, now I got to understand, is this a private one or is this something you put in your daughter's name? Because I feel like you really set her up. Because
that part.
Where school was she going to? Did she just not get any? Did she not get any Pell grants? Did she not get a Gold grant?
You gonna get a Pell grant at least, especially if you ain't, you know.
Did she not get work study? Like, what did she not get? Like, what school did she go to?
And also, if she's never looked at it, imagine how difficult it is to look at it and understand what the heck is going on and like.
Yeah, because I guarantee if she go back through and look at tuition, room board, whatever, it was not $140,000.
There's no way. That's like multiple degrees.
I also, kids, I would say that if you are in school and you're getting a big refund check, you might have got more money than what you needed.
And it's okay to call financial aid and have that conversation. Sometimes, I'm going to say this, call them early. If it's late, you need to go in person and schedule an appointment. Because it's very difficult to get in touch with financial aid.
Always.
About 2 weeks before school start, it is almost impossible all the way through to like halfway, you know, when you can drop classes and stuff. But if you don't understand and you want to know what is actually needed, because that was one of my questions. I think we talked about this last time. When you go to grad school, you typically have someone assigned to you specifically. But I was telling my financial aid lady, like, I only want to take out what is needed to cover the cost of tuition, not a dollar more.
No, that is facts.
But if you don't say that, though, they sometimes for them it's easy to just max you out. And then that's how you get in situations where you don't have any financial aid left for the semester because, or for the school year because you got maxed out earlier than you should have. So now you can't take summer classes because there's no FAFSA to cover it because you got a bigger refund in the winter.
Yep. Trust me, I know about it. Warshaw quickly zeroed in on Tracy's approach to the debt and recommended switching to the debt snowball method. That means paying out the smallest debt first, no matter the interest rate, and working up from there. You pay off a $3,000 debt, it frees up a little bit of money. You pay off another $6,000 debt, it frees up a little bit of money. Tracy revealed that her mom, see?
Please.
I knew it.
Please.
Tracy reveals that her mom had refinanced and consolidated the student loans privately in Tracy's name. While she vaguely knew loans were being taken out during school, she didn't know the final amount until years later. For a time, her mom even made payments by taking money from Tracy's paycheck through a shared bank account. I'm willing to bet the mama was getting some money from them loans because they was coming through a shared bank account.
$140, though? That, I don't know if that's true, but if that is true, that is so wrong.
Some money from my paycheck. How was she getting your paycheck? Warshaw asked. I think my bank account was still lumped into it when I was like 16. Warshaw encouraged Tracy to fully separate her finances and take back control. She also suggested selling the car if possible to get the $400 monthly payment off their backs. Despite everything, Tracy and her husband have solid income. Together, they make $124,000 a year. Warshaw called that fabulous news and reminded her there's a way forward. You got to do the debt snowball, she said. So that was just interesting because of...
140, and they will garnish you because it's a private institution. So thinking you just finna run off on the plug is not, that's not what's going to happen.
Yeah, my best
they
advice,
will garnish your paychecks, and you do not want to get to that pace.
My best advice for them was to be get a part-time.
Yeah.
Part-time job. Get on YouTube. Start doing Uber
Some
Eats.
Residual
something,
income.
And all that money could just go straight to the loans. That's probably what I would advise.
And it's probably going to be a situation where one of those people is going to have to work and pay the bills, and the other one is going to have to work and pay down the debt.
And
but that's, you know,
let me see.
Real well, teamwork.
Let's see something.
Cause that, so they got 140, 50, 60. They got 170,000 in debt.
And so also, what I already figured out by the tiny home having to pay $700 in land rent. I just Googled this, and like I said, this is not all the way, it's just AI overview. But it says tiny homes generally depreciate in value, especially those on wheels, which are often treated as personal property like RVs. The primary exception is when a stationary tiny home is built on a valuable piece of land where the land's appreciation can offset the structure's depreciation. Factors like location, market demand, and quality of construction influence a tiny home's resale value. So you can go through all those different things. But like I said, things like that are more considered to be like cars. They're not considered to be super valuable.
Like a home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would tell people to look into.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
That was a good one. Mm. Okay. I have two more. Why curiosity is everything in tech and cybersecurity. So, if we're keeping it real, threats evolve every day. We know this. We illustrate this in what we break down. Now, the tools that we use are also evolving every month. And if you're not aware of the latest features in your solution that you're using at work, maybe see about getting with someone that can provide you with those updates because these tools typically are updated month over month. But what doesn't evolve are or is people who are not curious. And those are the folks who get left behind fast. So when we think about curiosity, it literally is the engine of every strong career. It's the difference between someone who just does the job and someone who stands out. Somebody who's leveling up, somebody who's solving problems. Basically, the person everybody calls when things go left. A lot of us work with people like this on a day-to-day basis. You know who you can call to ask a question to. You know who's going to have the answer. You know who's going to support you. Now, what does a curious person look like in this industry? A curious person is someone who is always asking why instead of just accepting what is actually in front of them. They are playing with tools outside of work, whether that's labs, scripts, they're in cloud tenants, demos. They're breaking things on purpose just to see how they work. They're not scared to try new features, commands, or technologies. They're not waiting for someone to hand them a roadmap. They are the ones that are going to go find the answers. They're staying hungry. They're taking notes. They're reading threat reports. They're watching updates. These people become those problem solvers, not the task doers. Now, someone who isn't curious is someone who only touches what's in their job description. How many times have you heard somebody at work say, "That's not in my job description"? They never ask deep questions. They do copy and paste engineering, and they panic when something breaks because they never explore how it actually worked. Maybe they get stuck at that analyst level because they don't stretch themselves far or wide enough. They learned enough just to get by. Now, what we can see between the difference between the two is that one of them is growing, the other one is staying comfortable. And comfort is the fastest way to fall behind. Now, how curiosity levels you up in your career is it becomes your cheat code. It naturally pushes you into better problem solving. You ask better questions. You get better answers. Faster skill growth. You explore what others potentially could be avoiding. And confidence. You've seen enough systems break to know how to fix them. You also may be presented with more opportunities. Leaders love self-starters. And innovation. You become the person with new ideas and more resilient. When something goes wrong, you don't freeze. You start to investigate. So a lot of people think that cyber is just about memorizing tools, but it's not. It's about thinking, exploring, and getting curious. So a curious mindset is what lets you pivot from analyst to engineer to architect. Maybe you can try different tools. Maybe you're not just focused in on one area of security. Maybe you are like, oh, I want to do networking and I want to learn how to code. But picking up new certs, skill sets without actually being scared. Curious people don't want to be told what to learn. They're actually following wherever the sparks are and what interests them. So I just kind of want to talk a little bit about being curious because a lot of people want to work in this industry just because they want to make money and they're not curious and they're not serious and they don't want to put the work and they don't want to put the time in. And with the climate that we see today, cyber is an industry that's built for people who are curious. It just is what it is. If you're not curious, this is not the field for you. The people who stay curious become the trendsetters, the innovators, the troubleshooters, the people who grow faster and who are able to grow and advance their career more. So that's my TED Talk of the day, is to think to yourself, are you curious? And are you not curious because this isn't something that you're actually interested in?
Yeah, and that goes into the age-old conundrum where...
Okay, Wale.
No, it's something I was thinking about the other day. Well, a comment. There was... I chopped up like all our videos, like our best topics last week.
And I saw you going hammer.
Yeah. I said, I'm going to just start running it like any other big podcast. Like I said, shoot, if Club Shay Shay and Nightcap could do it, why we can't? But anyway... They were getting distraught about the job search process. And one woman was saying how, like, she'd been jobless for years. She's going to try to be a nurse. And I always find issue with that because I'm like, that's an important job. And you can't want to do nursing just because you get paid, because it ain't an easy job. It ain't easy to get through nursing school and clinicals.
School ain't easy, yeah. But a lot of people do that, though. A lot of people do that.
But that's how we have these nurses with horrible attitudes that don't like their job.
Yep.
And I feel like those one of those jobs you got to be made to do.
Just like this one.
If not, figure out how to do something in administration. Not when you got to deal with people, because we don't want that. And this goes back into what you're talking about with being curious with your career. The money is a good focal point, but For one,
it's okay for you to do it for the money, but if you're gonna do it for the money, you still gotta be curious.
You gotta be curious, but eventually the money not gonna hold you long enough. You gotta find something in it that you like.
Something that's passionate. There has to be some passion there because it's
and I'm not even gonna say super passionate, right? I'm super.
You ain't gotta be in love.
I'm gonna tell you, like, I really like cybersecurity, but I don't think cybersecurity has me the way I have about, like, in making content and media. Like, when I know I'm getting ready to record, I'm happy. I can't sleep. I have a boost of energy. Like, I wake up early or whatever, or when I'm doing my stuff.
You ready to knock it down?
Yeah. Like, so I'm not that passionate about it, but I really like cybersecurity a lot because it intertwines with everybody's life. And I see what happens with it when people don't do it. And anything that you see, like, it's not cyber related, you kind of.
Well, yes. Okay. Let me be clear. You don't have to be head over heels in love with it, but you can't come in and think that you're going to do the bare minimum and be successful in an ever-changing industry. You got to have some spark in you.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing about the it changes so much. So
because 5 years ago, we wasn't talking about AI for real. Like, yeah, there were people that were talking about it, but it wasn't.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
and so that's the thing where you start seeing the old people who've been at the company long enough, and sometimes they just getting by.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, get to the point where it's like, okay, you either gonna have to keep learning or what. And that's one of the things that it's hard to do. Like, it's hard. Like, there are people where they start their career, like, in the 90s or whatever. So they've been in information security almost 30 years now. They had to keep on learning different things. They started off on, Windows 95 or before that with floppy disk and dial-up. And now they learn these different things. Or there's attacks that they weren't doing when they were coming out. And they had to keep on learning how to get better at them. I mean, now, the one thing is true, though. The fundamentals don't change. Just the attacks are different.
Absolutely.
So that's what I would say. I would just say you have to keep on looking like me. Like, I've been, like, I should have been having my CSP a long time ago.
Same.
But I got my trial with O'Reilly, and I say, hey, every whatever hour someone will do, I'm going to do 25 questions on the practice test so I can figure out what domains on weekend and just study them. So that is how, like, I'm keeping up, like, because technically, if you got the knowledge, the CISP is just one of the things where if you got it on your resume and it's done, you probably, I'm not going to say it's going to give you 200K, but if you got the experience coupled with it, most of the time you'll be allowed to get sent in for, like, those management director level, senior director, senior manager, all those type of roles. You're going to see most of those people in information security got at least a CISSP, and then you may see a CISM or something like that. But yeah, that's just a little another, like, thing, like, how you just, like, if you're going to get search, make sure they enhance your career. Make sure they line up with what you want to do long term versus some people try to go get the – they've been doing help desk like 3, 4, 5 years. Granted, you do – I think you only need like 2 or I forgot how many domains experience in to do the CISSP, but somebody got to sign off on it. But the difference is sometimes that don't help you get to the bread versus the person that got the 10, 15 years in cyber and got the CISSP and the degrees and everything else. So –
I think it's important. Everybody is not curious, right? And so everybody should not have a nursing job, a tech job, or whatever it may be. But if you are struggling and you feel like, I just think I'm a regular, I'm really not, I just want to do the same thing every day, then you need to go work in customer service or something similar. Something that where you have a script. This is how you answer this question every day. And it's not for everybody, but, and it's no sneak diss.
I would say that, but however, we already know. Plus, 1 for English, 2 for Spanish. You can't even really do a lot of customer service jobs no more because AI bots and took over most of that job.
Yeah.
You got to say agent when you call.
You got to press 0 or star or
representative
pound.
Person.
Me, as soon as the phone get on, before they even ask in the language, customer service.
You know what's funny? If you've ever did help desk or customer service, when they trying to give you a script on, like, how to do something, like, I've did this before. I already know what I've did. I don't need none of that. I know the problem. Like, just fix that. Don't try to give me all this stuff on your script.
Yeah, like, or I guess tier 1 SOC role, they have SOPs, right, that they are – but, like, there are roles that will tell you step by step what to do. But those are not the roles that are going to take you where you want to go long term, yeah, is what I'm saying. You have to be able to think bigger than what this document is telling you to do. Yeah. Now you know what to do. What's next?
Honestly, I really believe that eventually, I'm not going to say SOCs will be no more, but they are gradually graduating them from being security operations centers to just plain old security analysts. Because you do so many different things.
You do a lot of different
things. You do stuff with phishing. You do stuff with insider threat. You do stuff with GRC. You do your incident response. You do some threat hunting. You may work with threat detection. At this point, you really are a security analyst. You're not really just working in the SOC. And that's how anything, all those SOPs that's click here, click here, click here, click here, all those could be automated.
That's what I'm saying.
So
you don't got
to
be.
Those should be automated. They're very mundane and tedious. Those should be automated to reduce human error.
Yeah.
And you just got to, you know, validate that the data is good. But needless to say, I also want to talk about ClickFix. It's been a while since we talked about, like, a lot of these different attacks. And this is ClickFix is something that people shouldn't fall for either. But they do. And for y'all don't know, like, just to sum up what ClickFix is, it's typically you on a website that's probably been compromised. And they say, oh, you got to update your computer. Press the Windows button, press Command C or Control C, and then press Windows R, and you like open up the run thing and it'll say paste the contents in it. And then now they got your system. But I'm going to read this article, but I like at a high level, if you want to skip past this part, that's what ClickFix is. ClickFix attack uses fake Windows update screen to push malware. ClickFix attack variants have been observed where threat actors trick users with a realistic-looking Windows update animation and a full-screen browser page and hide the malicious code inside images. ClickFix is a social engineering attack where users are convinced to paste and execute in Windows command prompt code or commands that lead to running malware on a system. The attack has been widely adopted by cyber criminals across all tiers due to its high effectiveness and has continually evolved with increasingly advanced deceptive lures. Since October 1st, researchers have observed ClickFix attacks where the pretense for executing dangerous commands was completing the installation of a critical Windows security update, and the more common human verification lure. The fake update page instructs victims to press specific keys in a certain sequence, which paste and execute commands from the attackers that were automatically copied to the clipboard via JavaScript running on the site. Yeah, so
that's suspicious.
I'm going to put the B-roll up here for that so people can actually see what that looks like. Now, guys, if you're going on a website that's telling you you need an update, false. Windows only notifies you of the updates from your actual notification center inside your operating system. They don't tell you via a browser because they're connected to you via the OS. And then you can always go to settings and check the updates and know if you need it or not. Yep. That's where official updates come from, not from Google Chrome, which is a total separate company. That's not going to know anything about your Windows computer unless you download something and ran a scan or something on your computer. A report from managed security services provider Huntress noticed that the new ClickFix variant drops the Luma C2 and what is this? And Rada Mantis information stealers. In one variant, the hackers use a human verification page, while in another, they rely on the fake Windows update screen. In both cases, though, the threat actors use steganography to encode the final malware payload inside an image. And it pretty much just defined what steganography is for y'all.
It's fun.
Yeah, we used to do that back in the day. Rather than simply appending malicious data to a file, the malicious code is encoded directly within the pixel data of a PNG image, relying on specific color channels to reconstruct and decrypt the payload in memory. Delivering the final payload starts with using the MSHTA Windows native binary to execute malicious JavaScript code. Now, that's pretty cool because a lot of times in the SOC, you'll see all these different processes going on, and you'll see detections for MSHTA. And so a lot of times those like kind of standard detections, and you just have to research what's actually happening in the detection to see if you got enough evidence to see if it's malicious or not. The entire process involves multiple stages that use PowerShell code in a .NET assembly responsible for reconstructing the final payload embedded inside a PNG file in an encrypted state. Inside Stego Lotus Manifest Resources, there is an AES encrypted blob that is actually a steganographic PNG file containing shell code that is reconstructed using custom, I believe that's C#. Yeah, C# code. Hunter's researchers noticed that the threat actor used a dynamic evasion tactic, commonly referred to as Sea Trampoline, where the entry point function started calling 10,000 empty functions. Oh, this is a lot. This is the cool security research stuff that people do. They just get paid to research all this stuff and make good write-ups. The shell code holding the InfoStealer samples is extracted from the encrypted image and is packed using the donut tool that allows executing VBScript, JavaScript, EXE, DLL files, and .NET assemblies in memory. After unpacking, Hunter's researchers were able to retrieve the malware, which in the analyzed attacks was Luma C2 and Rhodomantis. The diagram below serves as a visual representation of how the entire attack works. So that's pretty cool. I'm definitely going to put that stuff right there to just kind of show you what happens with the victim when you click on all this stuff. And it's a really good.
Did I tell you what happened to me when I visited a wrong website?
When?
I was typing too fast. I don't even remember where. I don't remember the site I was trying to access, but it took me to a bad website. And my computer lost it. Like, I was totally convinced that ransomware was trying to take over the system.
Yes.
It was maybe like, we talked about it. It was in the last few months. Okay. But I started running a scan on my computer, just trying to figure out what the heck was going on. Guess what it was? It was a browser extension that was sending, like, the notifications were coming so excessively that I felt,
you had a drive-by download?
I was crashing out because I was like, you're too smart for this. Like, what are you, like, you're moving, you need to slow down. I ended up having to go to my notifications and unsubscribe. Like, it was how fast notifications was coming in. If you are not experienced, you would have been crashing out. Like, it was dinging, like, every 25 seconds.
I wonder how you did that. We should replicate that.
It was awful.
You know, what browser you normally use?
I like Edge.
So Malwarebytes has some extensions that'll block crap like that.
It was bad. Like, if I did not know the things that I know, I would have thought it was over with for the whole computer.
The Rhodomantis that used the Windows Update lure was first spotted by researchers back in October. Let's see. Okay, that's kind of done from that. But it says, Huntress reports that the law enforcement operation resulted in the payload not being delivered anymore on the fake Windows Update domains, which are still active. To stay safe from this type of click fix attack, the researchers recommend disabling the Windows Run box and monitoring for suspicious process change such as explorer.exe, spawning mshta.exe, or PowerShell. Additionally, when investigating a cybersecurity incident, analysts can check run MRU registry keys to see if the user entered commands in the Windows Run box. So, my responders, you got a gem at the end. Check run MRU registry keys to see if the user entered commands in the Windows Run box. But yeah, that was just another attack I want to talk about that people fall victim to because they don't know. It looks legitimate.
Listen
to them,
but
they just don't understand. And it goes back into, as simple as this is, the small part of being technical is just understanding the difference between, like, hey, your browser and your operating system and where updates come from.
They're not coming from the browser, period. Like you said.
It does trick them, though, because in the real browser, it has the Microsoft logo right here, and it's actually
a little spinning.
Yeah, I don't know if this thing was actually running stuff. It probably was. But this is when it says, like, if you're on any site that's telling you to copy and paste something, like, watch out.
First of all, when you said it was telling you to enter in certain, commands.
Yeah, so you can open up the Windows Run box.
Yeah. Stay out of there if you don't know what you're doing.
That's crazy. I would love to do that on, I'm going to try that on SquareX and see what happens just to have fun.
All right. Last but not least, CrowdStrike. So, CrowdStrike confirmed that they have fired a suspicious insider who allegedly shared internal info with a hacker collective. The hacker group known as Scattered Lapsus Hunters, which combines members of several known hacking groups, posted screenshots in a Telegram channel that appeared to show CrowdStrike's internal dashboards, including a link to an employee's Okta SSO panel. The insider reportedly shared pictures of their screen externally. CrowdStrike says their systems were never compromised and that no customer data was affected. The group claimed they used a third-party vendor, Gainsight, as a route to access CrowdStrike via breach of that vendor's system, but CrowdStrike denies this route led to a breach. Why do we care? It wasn't a remote attacker hacking in. It was actually someone inside who helped, which is something we talked about last week and a core risk in enterprise security. The allegation here included that a vendor was used as an access path. We have discussed this time and time again, month over month. A lot of the large incidents that we've discussed are between me and you have included third-party risk. And then public claim of compromise versus actual compromise. So the hackers claim to have compromised CrowdStrike. CrowdStrike says that they did not. And with that conflicting narrative, that matters from a trust perspective, from a brand perspective, from an incident response perspective, from a stock perspective. So the kind of data that was shared, those dashboards and those SSL panels, means that that insider obviously had access to some highly sensitive systems, which is the kind of thing that you watch for in those, zero trust architectures. Mm-hmm. So they were terminated last month after an internal investigation concluded screen picks were shared externally. The attacker group claims to have paid the insider $25,000 for access/authentication cookies. CrowdStrike says that their systems were never breached and that they turned the incident over to law enforcement. One of the things that I was just kind of wanted to talk a little bit more about here was that when we think about like the mitigations that we can actually put in place, obviously threat monitoring, doing some sort of blocking of screenshotting or sensitive screens be shared. There are DLP policies that you can use that can block screenshots. You have watermarks on those internal dashboards. You can disable copy and paste for sensitive apps. And then, of course, you have, specific restrictions you can put in place from a VDI perspective. But a lot of leaks happen when someone just snaps a picture of their laptop or a screen. And DLP can help kind of curve that. So if you do snap the picture, it might say Cyber Shorty on that watermark to show that it was you. It was you who released it. It was your account. The watermark has your name on it. We know exactly who did it.
Yeah, so the taking picture thing has always been...
No, it's going to get worse, sir.
No, but that's what I'm saying. That's always been an area of, like, I always bring it up in interviews because I was like, iPhone, as great as me taking a picture of me and the copy text is, it's a big insider risk hazard because it's nothing you can do to stop me from taking that picture on my personal phone.
Yeah.
And I can copy straight. Now, all the stuff that you copy may not be one-to-one, but all you got to do is look at it. And so that's one of the things where maybe you put a certain policy in to say, hey, if you're going to access this system information, you admit to having your webcam on the whole time. So we're watching what you do while you do this.
I get it, though. I'm not mad at it, but that's a lot. But I get it.
Yeah, but I mean,
I like the watermark.
Remember, hold on. When did you just say, hey, forget the inconvenience?
No, facts. That's why I said I don't like it, but I get it.
The watermark part is fine if you screenshot it internally from the computer, but I'm talking about.
No, on your phone. Yeah. Facts, yeah.
I'm looking at you like using your own phone to do it. Hey, and if you try to just cover the thing, we're going to say, hey, we cannot see we got this software that says we do not detect the real person. And I know people are going to try to use like AI and cutouts. And like, it's going to be a lot where people do. It's going to be a chess match of how do we figure that, but that's the only thing I think of when people work remotely is like, hey, you have to do that.
That's why they want people in the office.
It still can happen in the office.
It can.
You got people, I remember.
I mean, it's just a real quick.
I remember before leaving one of my other jobs, a person was getting ready to leave, and so they said, you know what, I'm going to just print all the stuff out from the printer. So they printed all the stuff out and left with it.
They need to put some DLP in place.
Well, I mean, it was, but the thing is, it depends. I don't know what they printed. But it's no crime to use the printer in the office.
It's not a crime, but if you're seeing all confidential things.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know. I don't think we knew what it was until, so I helped them append like a Splunk search with whatever they were printing out. So it showed whatever was printed out. And so that after that, I don't know what happened with the investigation.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. Even that, like sometimes you can't beat old-fashioned apps, going to print it out and go.
But also, the moral to this story is that this can happen to anyone.
Oh yeah,
like anyone. It literally anyone. So what does the future look like to prevent things like this from happening? Obviously, we don't have the answers, but I'm just saying, food for thought.
Yeah, nah, for sure, for sure. So one last one I think I want to briefly talk about because I saw the TL going crazy about it, and I thought it was pretty interesting because we are some of the first people that talked about it. Is allegedly Doge days are over as Trump disbands Elon Musk's team of federal cost cutters. Now, I'm prefacing this by saying people I know that work in GovTech or federal government jobs, they said it's not over. They're just a little bit more covert. They just probably don't go by Doge. But let's see what the article has to say. The Trump administration has disbanded the Department of Government Efficiency, or Doge, a controversial team of federal cost cutters previously led by Elon Musk, despite months left of the unit's mandate. Reuters first reported this weekend that Doge had broken up, ending a months-long effort by Musk and his associates, many recruited from his various private sector companies, to reduce alleged fraud and waste and cut employees across the board. Doge was created by an executive order signed by President Trump in January. The initiative was expected to run close to 2 years. As of early November, Doge doesn't exist, according to Scott Cooper, the director of U.S. Office of Personnel Management. That's OPM for short, guys. That's the people that issue out the clearances and stuff, which serves as the federal government's human resources department. In a tweet on Sunday, Cooper said that Doge may not have been centralized leadership anymore under the U.S. Digital Service, but the principles of Doge remain alive and well: deregulation, eliminating fraud, waste, and abuse, reshaping the federal workforce, masking efficiency as a first-class citizen, which is translations for they still around, we just don't go by Doge.
Literally.
Or Rose by any other name.
They, what is it called? They...
Mask?
They did a refresh. They did a refresh.
Yeah. They're probably just going to be regular workers. Honestly, these people are just QA workers.
I honestly think that maybe they regret how public it went. We probably shouldn't know as much as we know, even though we probably don't know everything that we should know. But you know what I'm saying. Like, I feel like it was supposed to
be. They actually have done, if people can go on the record, they probably actually did some good. Because there's some people that was getting away with.
It was a lot of spending.
I got videos with people that work in the government. It's like, man, I'm gonna be real. People ain't doing no work. I got videos of people saying this on wax. So, hate it or love it, there was a lot of money not being utilized or people just wasting jobs or not doing work. Like, that was going on. I mean, that's those people's prerogative, but at the same time, come on. While active, Doge claimed to have saved the federal government billions of dollars and wasted taxpayer dollars, but critics, including lawmakers, say Doge dismantled federal programs and government departments with little to show in terms of quantifiable savings. Now, that's true. I don't think we saw any reports on that. They just claimed they did, but you know, we don't believe you need more people. Doge cuts have also been blamed for countless deaths across the world, following the shutdown of the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, which provided humanitarian aid and disaster relief. Doge also accessed federal databases containing highly sensitive personnel information belonging to millions of Americans and was accused of security lapses that put the data at risk from malicious adversaries. Musk departed Doge earlier this year after a public falling out with President Trump. Several Doge staffers are said to be fearful that they could face future federal charges without protections from Musk, who might have been able to secure presidential pardons for them if necessary. Several Doge staffers are now working for other U.S. federal government departments, according to Reuters, while other prominent Doge staffers have said they no longer work for the government. Edward Christine, whose nickname Big Boss went viral, said in a post on X in June that he's officially out of Doge. I don't think Doge needs to be a part of the government. It's one of those who polices the police thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like cops and internal affairs. Somebody has to be looking at everything.
Neutral.
Because that happens at, think about it.
It's like doing an audit.
The Big Four comes in and they audit.
Yeah, it's like doing an audit for your friend. Like, yeah, that's not that good, but I ain't gonna put that down on the list.
Facts, facts, facts.
I think that it's just important for people to just be educated about what's going on. I think that the older we get, the more important. I was watching a TikTok that basically was saying, like, who cares if the news makes you sad, if it makes you depressed, which me, it gets me down. It's just bad thing after bad thing. But it is important for you to be aware of what's going on so you have an informed decision, you have an educated opinion, and you can make educated decisions, like voting, for example, because you know what's going on.
Yeah, no, for real, though. But RIP to Doge, as it was named, we shall circle back when we hear some news from it. Now, I know last week when we were kind of talking about the people not going to school, anti-intellectualism, all that stuff, I saw one of the videos. I didn't listen to all of them, but I knew she was talking about when they're pushing Black boys to go to trade schools and things like that. And pretty much of why, yes, that's a thing that we can do, but also what they are trying to signify to us to do. Because I forgot what we was talking about, how they're trying to tell people get all these trades, but meanwhile, their kids are still going to school and they're running all the companies. So I want to click on that one because I thought that was pretty good.
Is it ticky?
Yep.
There's this wave and this push to Black boys to not worry about college and just get a trade. Why is it an either or situation when it comes to Black children? Why can't they do both? Nobody tells white kids or wealthy kids to just get a trade and not worry about college. But all of a sudden, when it comes to Black children, college is unnecessary. College is a scam. And their only option is to go into labor. Yes, there are honorable, high-paying trades that are essential. However, when you get these trades and you're out there and you're in competition with other people for those leadership roles, 9 times out of 10, they're going to give it to the person that is college educated. Telling our boys to only get trades is not empowerment, it's limitation. All of it should be on the table. The issue isn't education. The issue is lack of opportunity, lack of resources, lack of exposure, lack of representation for Black boys. And we don't fix that by removing college altogether. There's this wave in the-
I actually do agree. And I think that it doesn't have to be get a trade or go to college, but I think that we should be better presented with all of the options that are available to us to live life, right? I think that it's well, you could have just went and got a trade, or well, you could have just went and got a degree, when there's more to it than choosing either one of those options.
Yeah. And I think it should be both. Like, I think a trade is a good fallback. Like, I know for me.
Absolutely. Especially right now. Yeah. Especially right now.
I haven't did it in a while, but like, I grew up like pouring concrete. Well, really? I didn't pour it, but I helped my pops with like, so my dad's trade is a cement finisher. So I would help him do, people want to extend their, like either get make patios like or extend their driveway. Yeah. So I would go help. I wouldn't set it up. So the term is, you would form it up, and that's when you see somebody dig something out. They put the 2x4s and the wood there, and then they put X amount of dirt in there so it could be level. So when they pour it, it don't crack, and it has the certain things or whatever. So my dad would come in, by the time we poured and got it straightened a little bit, he would finish it to make it really nice and neat with the tools. So I used to do that. I was like, that's a trade. I can go learn and do whatever you can work. But there's a limitation on that unless you got your own company.
Ain't it crazy how we about to be in a position where we got to hustle our lives like that, where it's not just go to college, get a degree, but now if you got a trade, then you can fall back on that if the job fall back on
I
you.
Think, but you know what? I honestly think it's always like been like that.
For the people who know. Now people are finding out more. See, at first it was for the people who knew. If you like on some, if you know, you know.
Yeah. I think since 08, people felt like, hey, I just got to figure out how to do something else just in case. You just never know.
Well, you've been exposed to this a little bit more than I have. But I'm seeing
it. I was a kid in 08. I was 16.
Well, I mean, just in the field a little bit longer.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like for me, I didn't start seeing that until maybe around COVID in my world. Not saying it wasn't there, but that's when I started realizing like, oh, okay. So most people are doing something else instead of just this one thing.
Yeah. And this is not to dissuade people. And it's not to talk down on trades, because there are people who have trades that make more people with degrees. There are people that have degrees that make more people with trades. We focus on the majority, not the minority. And so I literally just asked the question, on average, how much do college graduates earn versus trade workers?
Oh, that's a good one.
And so it said, on average, college graduates earn more than trade workers, with the median annual salary of approximately $70,000 for bachelor degree holders, compared to around $50,000 to $60,000 for skilled trades. Now, I'm going to interject right there. The people with the $50,000 to $60,000 probably didn't rack up $140,000 in student loan debt. So I'm saying that so y'all don't come to the comments like, well, I ain't have to pay, get all that debt. I'm with y'all on that. With y'all, so then you know. But the earnings potential for college graduates grows significantly over time, while trade wages tend to plateau. However, it's important to note that earnings vary widely based on college major or specific trade, and there could be high-paying jobs in both fields, which I agree, because you got people that weld, underwater welders.
Mm-hmm. Electrician.
Electricians, and you got it's a lot of them. And that'd be cool, like, just to talk about, like, the top 10 highest-paid trades or whatever. Let's see, what else do we have on here? And also, trades are not easy. People make it seem
welding, like, please.
People,
electrician.
Like, so funny
work.
So no, funny thing with me is I did wood shop in high school and welding.
I did wood shop. Ate that down.
I like welding. Welding is actually easier than wood shop because with wood shop you got to
wood shop you got to be perfect. Facts.
Much like, more precise.
Yeah, very.
But it's not easy. You're still gonna have to. I forgot how long your program is. You're gonna have to study, pass your test. You're going to have to be an apprentice for I don't know how long.
Well, so, just think about it. Electricity in someone's house.
Yeah.
Home. Like, get it wrong no, if you want.
Think about, we just talking about the wood shop stuff. Like, we couldn't use any of the machines. We had to get 100.
You got to pass all the safety stuff first before you can start. And
we had these ruler tests.
And there was always someone supervising each, because you know it's a lot of equipment and woodworking.
But I'm saying you had to get 100s on every ruler test we took.
Yeah.
So you had to know what 1 3/4 was or 4 Ooh. And two, all that kind of Ooh. Stuff.
Yeah.
And look.
Get the fractions
out of using
a
freaking
here.
Hacksaw and using a push stick to push through that so you don't cut your hand off. He's telling you, hey, be safe. That's the number one thing. Be safe. Don't cut nothing off.
Yeah. I think either way, regardless of what you choose to do, it's not easy just because it's less time.
Yeah, so, I mean, I would just say try to pick what's the best for you, look in your area, how you can make money, skill up. The thing is, the best of both worlds. Now, if you go get a trade and say, hey, I want to go. Now, here's the key. You might want to spend a lot of money on a 4-year. So you may go get an associate's in business administration because you have a trade. Now you figured out, okay, I can start my own LLC. I can do this and I can do that. And then you can start marketing with TikTok and Facebook and YouTube, Instagram, and showing your work. That's going to start helping you get leads in. See, I'm giving you the game for free. That's what you see everybody do. You'll see somebody say, hey, watch how we renovate this bathroom. And then people are DMing them, hey, do you service us out here? So you can make a lot of money that way.
Yep.
So I'm definitely not talking down on it. That's what I'm saying, like blue collar men.
Especially when you're known for doing something and you good. Like my cousin, he does handyman services like Mountain TVs mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
When I tell you, they like he's advertising holding on.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean, on the TV, like it's up there.
Because you think about it, you might have a house and you might have 4 or 5 rooms. Hey, I want one in the living room. I want one in the main room. I want one in my office. I want one in the kids'
exactly.
room. You got 4 or 5 TVs mounted
in one house,
and they probably made $300 to $400 off that. And that's not including the people who got the hookups where say, hey, we got a deal where you buy a TV from us and all that other stuff. They could charge a premium. They can offer insurance. It's a lot of different things. Like I said, so I'm definitely not talking down on it. But the thing you got to understand is that if we're just only sole people that they're pushing through the trades, we will not be, which, and we still kind of behind an 8-ball right now of running the companies. So it's like trade-offs in both. That's why I say we need to have a strong community. Like, just look at what, like, the agent communities do. Like, you got the people that's in corporate, and you got the people that got their own businesses. You got the people that are the tailors or whatever else they do. So you can do all this. So that's what we used to do back in the day when we had our own communities on the Black Wall Street or whatever. You had your doctors, your lawyers.
Imagine how lit that would have been today.
All that. Well, I mean, the difference is that's kind of how it was like in the South. Like back home, there are literally, and it's probably, I don't know how it is like for you, but back home, there are definitely neighborhoods that were Black neighborhoods.
For sure.
Where you had the Same. Professional Black people that stayed there. Everybody did something to help somebody out.
Yep.
Like even you overlooking it, but it's barbers making, $200,000, $300,000, cutting hair.
Yep.
But it's all about customer service and skill set.
Branding is everything.
But that's, I mean, that's what kind of what I want to touch on for that one. And then I thought this was pretty funny. It was talking about
there being a pyramid scheme. Listen to this.
Police officer pyramid scheme the whole time.
Off-duty police officers could get a side gig as a DARE officer, and then they could recruit other police officers in their area. The more people you recruited, the more kickbacks you got. And that's why it spread so fast, because it was kind of an MLM. And the way they got that model, one of the board members, the founder of Herbalife.
Did you just hear what they just said? Well, this didn't work. And the fact that they like eventually came around to weed, you remember that? When the DARE program was like, all right, the list of drugs you can't do doesn't have weed anymore. Like, they just let weed in. Like, what? That was the main one you guys warned us against. Remember the girl with the deflated skin on the couch because she was high?
Oh my gosh, I do remember that.
Which, it turns out, that was a great analogy for being too high. That's exactly what it feels like. But that was all we, and then eventually they're just like, no, weed's okay, but the cocaine, remember the cocaine songs and the heroin songs? Listen to those. Bro, what? This was a pyramid scheme. And to be honest, it doesn't make any difference for us.
Do you remember the DARE song?
Schools and told.
Maybe. Didn't you have a hat on?
Yeah, but it was like DARE me to something. Do you remember the song?
No.
You remember it? It's
no.
It's actually, they'd be funny to end it off with. It's like a, I know the part is like the end part was you doing a little rap. It's like, don't push me, don't hurt me, thumb me down, cuz. It's like, let me see some DARE song. If it come on, I might remember it. Like, I ain't gonna lie, it really used to jam.
The I won't do drugs. A won't have an attitude.
Okay, I did in elementary school.
I will respect myself. E,
yeah.
I will educate me.
Yeah, we sang this in elementary school for sure.
I didn't graduate from DARE.
We sang that in elementary school for sure. Hey. Like, we learned that in music class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so funny, bro, the stuff they make you do. I missed that, though, elementary.
Do you remember the abstinence movement?
Yeah.
Do you remember, like, the cards, the t-shirts, the backpacks?
I don't remember all that, but I know my mom used to be over the purity group.
Yeah. You okay, so back home, there was a huge abstinence, I'm going to call it a conference, but it wasn't a conference, but it was just kids coming together and free everything, pizza this, you got all this abstinence stuff. There was backpacks, t-shirts, wristbands. This was when we was wearing them Livestrongs.
I remember that.
It was when we was wearing them. What else was there? There was actually an abstinence card that was like a wallet card. Like,
I mean, I would say it's a good way not to get diseases. Just throw that out there.
But I was just bringing that up because that was another movement that is non-existent today.
I don't think it was like DARE, though. DARE was like.
No, it was big. Or maybe it was just big where I'm at. But it was huge.
It probably was big, but like, you know, DARE is universal. Like, everybody. The fact that you knew the song the time I played it.
I knew the song.
I should have let it get to the rap. Check your attitude at the door. I'm finna send that to Devin, man.
I'm finna see. Was this a federal initiative?
I don't think so.
I just know it was huge where I'm from. Like,
yeah,
everywhere.
I probably was doing too much bumping and grinding.
I'm screaming. It says it was a federal initiative. Blah, blah, blah. From the 90s to 2010s, it was called the Abstinence Education Program, created in 1996 under Bill Clinton, funded through federal grants in all 50 states, blah, blah, blah. During the Obama administration, funding moved towards evidence-based teen pregnancy prevention. So, yeah, that's crazy.
For sure. Now, this last one is one that I wanted to review and listen to last week, but we kind of ran out of time. So it's pretty much how people believe their view, but how leaders view talent.
Most people think they're A players until they hear what an A player actually is. This one's going to sting a little, and it's a longer video, so you might want to bookmark this one. I'm Deepali Vyas, your elite recruiter, and I've interviewed over 50,000 executives, sat in boardrooms where careers are decided, and I can spot a B player in seconds, and an A player that I can market to my clients in even less time. Let's get into it. I'm pulling back the curtain on the framework leaders use behind closed doors to classify talent. Framework number one, what drives each of them? A players seek challenge, B players seek credit, and C players seek comfort. A players want pressure, they grow in it. B players chase applause and hire C players who can hand them the credit. And the C players, they just want to stay safe and unnoticed. Framework number two, how they operate. A players are confident, B players are calculated, and C players are careful. A players will say, I don't know. That's confidence. B players are competent but insecure. They perform just well enough to get recognition, but avoid anything that exposes gaps. They block talent, slow innovation, and lower the ceiling for everyone around them. C players hide to avoid being wrong. And here's my boardroom point of view. This is the part that no one tells you. C players aren't the real problem. B players are. Because B players look competent while quietly damaging performance, mm-hmm. blocking growth, and suffocating A-level talent. A leaders avoid them, A players outgrow them, and companies eventually push past them. If you want to understand this framework deeply and learn how to position yourself as an A player in the eyes of leadership, comment Zoom and join my next live webinar where I break down the actual rules of the corporate game and teach you how to win it. I'm Deepali Vyas, your elite recruiter, doing the research for you so you don't have to.
She always dropping the gems. She know what she be talking about.
That's facts. And when she said about like the A player seeking pressure, that's all I could think about. I can only...
Oh, you think darkness is your
ally? That's all I can think about.
You merely adopted the dark. I was born in it, molded by it. I didn't see the light until I was already a man. By then, it was nothing to me but blinding.
Who are you? He acted in that role. You ever seen that?
No. What is it?
Batman, The Dark Knight Rises.
Wait, I did see that.
I'm about to say, everybody's
like in
seen
like
it.
2010, 9, 11, somewhere around there.
Oh, 9 or 10, I think.
Yeah,
or 11.
It. I saw every Marvel movie that came out DC. Around that time. Or
that's DC. That's Batman.
Whoever, Cousins.
Nah, you know they're going to get you in the comments.
Relax. I know the difference sometimes.
I like that you admit it sometimes.
Sometimes.
But we didn't have any voicemails today. We said at the beginning, like, you guys hope you're enjoying your Thanksgiving. But
what are you thankful for?
I think I'm just thankful because, you know, you hear the people say, like, just having a job to complain about is a blessing.
Okay, I was finna say the same. I'm thankful to have a job that pays the bills, the little things. I think I'm just grateful for it. I'm grateful for it all. I'm grateful for the journey. I'm grateful for the frustration along the way. I'm grateful for the growth. I'm grateful for community.
Yeah, I think I'm just grateful for everything that is good and bad because it's helped molding me. All these lessons I've learned this year from various things, different things. I'm grateful for the content creation, the people I've met, you coming on board, the kids, family, anybody that's, you know, impacted my life positively. I think I'm grateful for all that type of stuff. And like I said, things don't always go our way, but, you know, eventually they do work out.
No, facts. Yeah. I'm grateful to be able to do things that I didn't used to be able to do. That's the best part about life to me. Like, mm-hmm. I'm grateful that for growth and just to see, like, oh, I can do this, but I know 6, 10 years ago, I couldn't. I wasn't in a position. So
yeah.
I'm grateful for where I'm at.
Facts. See, now, if this is a gospel podcast... I'll put it on that Hezekiah Walker grateful, and then we can sing grateful in the podcast.
Nah, facts.
But I appreciate everybody for rocking with us this long. If you like this episode, y'all have to do like it, subscribe, share it out. And until next time, let's stay textual. It'll be December when we see y'all next time, and we out. Peace.